is they're saying is the cause of the issue. If they're being vague, perhaps get another garage to have a look at it and give you that. You need something that says this is an inherent manufacturer's problem. Finally, go online, put the same make and model of car into a search engine, because if you've got the problem, the chances are other people are complaining about the same thing. That's really good evidence. Thank you very much for your calls, texts and tweets this evening. That's it from me, consumer lawyer Dean Dunham. A quick reminder that the advice offered in this hour is for guidance only. You should always seek your own independent legal opinion. I'll be back next Sunday, 9 p.m. with another LBC Consumer Hour. In the meantime, if you missed any of tonight's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion. Put your news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 1, it's Richard Spur, but next here on LBC, it's Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Dean. A packed programme tonight. We'll talk about the British aircraft bombing Syria and what we hope to achieve by that. Keir Starmer says that a Labour leadership challenge would be a gift to Nigel Farage. We'll talk about those weight loss jabs and the big mistake that many people who are taking them are making. We'll check in with our weather forecaster to see how long we'll have to suffer this cold spell and hear the latest from Crans, Montana about that terrible bar fire. But first, Donald Trump is now threatening the interim leader of Venezuela, who he hours ago said he approved of. That and more with me, Nick Abbott, after the new news at 10 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Defence Minister of Venezuela is demanding the release of the country's president after his arrest and transportation to New York by the US military. Nicolas Maduro is expected to go before a court tomorrow on drug charges, while President Trump says the United States will now run Venezuela. The US Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, has denied the Trump administration is at war with Caracas. LBC's Washington correspondent is Simon Marks.
He's given a very combative interview to CBS. And remember that CBS is now an increasingly pro-Trump network in the United States. And the fact that this was such a combative interview, I think, gives you a sense of the scale of the effort that Marco Rubio is having to go to try and explain exactly what the US government's position is with regard to Venezuela post-Maduro.
Officials in Switzerland say they have now identified the remaining 16 victims of a fire at a bar on New Year's Eve. They've now been able to put names to all 40 of the dead who'd gone to the Constellation in Crans, Montana. A murder investigation is underway in West Yorkshire following the death of a 72-year-old man. Stephen Yedernak was found unresponsive at his home in Wakefield on Christmas Eve. He died in hospital 3 days later. Two prisoners remain free after the arrest of a third who'd gone missing from an open prison in Gloucestershire. 39-year-old Aaron Thomas is due before magistrates tomorrow after disappearing from HMP Layhill. But the policing and crime commentator, Danny Shaw, has been telling LBC open prison escapes should be kept in perspective.
We're not talking about something that's in the same category of releases in error here. We're talking about something which is comparatively rare. It's very worrying when it happens.
Yeah.
And there's obviously a big police manhunt underway to find these two men, and I hope they're caught quickly, but this is something which is pretty rare that happens from open prisons.
A man's been charged after a traffic attendant suffered serious facial injuries in County Down. Police say the man in his 30s was injured in Newcastle on Saturday. And an optical cable belonging to a private company has been damaged in the Baltic Sea. Latvia's Prime Minister says the circumstances surrounding the disruption are under investigation. LBC weather, more snow showers for northern Scotland and coastal areas around the country. Patchy snow will also move into parts of central and southern England, but dry and cold elsewhere. We'll see a low of around minus 5 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening. The winner of the prestigious FIFA Peace Prize, President Donald Trump, has stated that the US will run Venezuela. until such a time as we can do a safe and proper judicious transition. Those were his words. He also said that, quotes, very large United States oil companies will take over the nation's oil industry, and that the nationalization of Venezuela's oil industry was, in his words, one of the largest thefts of American property in the history of our country. Simon Marks is LBC's Washington correspondent. He joins us on the line now to take us through this labyrinth. Good evening, Simon.
Good evening, Nick.
Can we start with the beginning, the background of this? By what measure is Venezuela's oil Americans?
Well, it is flatly false to claim that Venezuela has ever stolen any American oil. There is a tortured history here, and to understand it, you have to go back to 1976, when Gerald Ford was in the White House. And at the time, the then Venezuelan president, Carlos Andres Perez, decided that he was going to nationalize Venezuela's oil industry. This is long before Nicolas Maduro was in charge of Venezuela, or before he had sort of studied at the knee of his predecessor, President Hugo Chavez. Neither of them were at that point in 1976 dreaming of one day being in charge of Venezuela. President Carlos Andres Perez nationalized the industry, and he created a state-owned oil company called PDVSA. And there were a variety of American oil companies that had been working in Venezuela prior to that. They claimed that they had lost around $5 billion in investment in the Venezuelan oil industry. They were compensated to the tune of $1 billion each. So you can argue that those companies were out of pocket to the tune of around $4 billion. Not that they had any claim on ownership of Venezuelan oil, but that they had invested some money in trying to modernize the Venezuelan oil industry and partner with what became the state-owned oil corporate in the country. If you then fast forward to 2007, there were still a couple of oil companies from the United States working in conjunction with the Venezuelan state-owned entity. And at that point, President Hugo Chavez, now in charge, leading his, what he called his Bolivarian socialist revolution in Venezuela, decided that it was time to go full bore on nationalization and gave the remaining American oil companies, I think there were two of them, about 6 months to come to terms with giving up their infrastructure in Venezuela and their every aspect of their sort of drilling operations and everything that they were doing with regard to Venezuelan oil. And they were offered compensation or told that if they couldn't agree compensation, they were simply going to have their assets expropriated. And in the end result was that their assets were expropriated. Now, this does not mean that the United States had its oil stolen. That never occurred. Nor, of course, does it mean that the United States has any rights to Venezuelan oil. But what Donald Trump clearly has his eye on is the largest known oil reserves anywhere on the planet. They all lie offshore, off the Venezuelan coast. And he wants American oil companies back in there. And he basically wants to take control of Venezuela's oil industry. And you and I have both been alive long enough to live through successive U.S. presidents who traditionally have always denied that they are waging any kind of war for oil, even when it is mooted and suggested that they might be. On this occasion, we're actually in a situation where the American president is arguing that absolutely this is all about a battle to take control of Venezuela's oil, and he falsely justifies this by suggesting that American oil was stolen, that various American presidents did nothing to get it back, and he is now going to take action to ensure that what is rightfully America's is back on the American side of the aisle, which of course is a complete false narrative relating to what was Venezuela's sovereign right, by the way, to nationalize its oil industry in 1976.
Right, so in a nutshell, Venezuela did not sell its oil reserves to America. What it took was drilling kit and, you know, all of the other appurtenances, the sort of appendages that come with drilling oil. It wasn't the oil itself they took, it was...
Well, and there were leases to drill, but they were leases held under government contract. It wasn't an in-perpetuity thing, I now own Venezuelan oil.
Right. It was initially about drugs, though, wasn't it? Which is particularly odd, because Donald Trump has pardoned three of the biggest drug dealers in the history of the United States of America. Juan Orlando Hernandez, the former president of Honduras, convicted in the U.S. of conspiring to import 400 tons of cocaine into the U.S. He was pardoned by Donald Trump from a 45-year prison sentence. And there was Ross Ulbricht, the creator of the dark web marketplace Silk Road, which facilitated $200 million worth of anonymous drug sales. He was serving 40 years. Trump pardoned him. And there was Garnet Gilbert Smith, a Baltimore drug kingpin, described by the DEA as one of the largest cocaine and heroin dealers to be arrested by the DEA, serving a 25-year sentence, and Trump pardoned him too. So it didn't have anything to do with drugs.
Well, and it also didn't have anything to do with drugs, because when President Trump says that fentanyl is heading into the United States from Venezuela, in fact, it's a tiny percentage of the amount of fentanyl that is coming into the United States. Most of it is coming from China. And also, it is far from evident that the amount of cocaine or marijuana, which, by the way, the president has now relaxed the regulation of at a federal level, it's far from evident that most of those products, those narcotics coming into the United States, are coming from Venezuela. Now, Vice President J.D. Vance has attempted to deal with all of this today in a posting on his social media account. He says, I want to address this. First off, fentanyl isn't the only drug in the world, and there is still fentanyl coming from Venezuela, or at least there was. Okay, sure, there are small quantities of it. Second, cocaine, which is the main drug trafficked out of Venezuela, is a profit center for all the Latin America cartels. If you cut out the money from cocaine or even reduce it, you substantially weaken the cartels overall, he claims. Then he goes on to talk about the oil issue and says, I see a lot of criticism about oil. 20 years ago, Venezuela expropriated oil property and used that stolen property to get rich and fund their narco-terrorist activities. He says, I understand the anxiety over the use of military force, but are we just supposed to allow a communist to steal our stuff in our hemisphere and do nothing? Great powers don't act like that. Now, of course, you can also argue that what great powers don't do is pierce the sovereignty of their neighbours, go in suggesting to the world that they are now running Venezuela, even though they are not, because they have left Maduro's regime intact. And today, they were completely unable to explain why they're not calling for fresh elections, why they are not demanding that opposition leaders from Venezuela living in exile should all immediately be allowed to return to the country. They still can't quite explain what all of this is about, even as the numerous twists and turns in their telling of why they were taking action against the Venezuelans going back several weeks continue to reiterate all over again. I mean, we hear a different story every single time any one of them speaks.
Yeah, now, Delcy Rodriguez is the vice president, and she was supporting Maduro and yet has been approved as interim leader by Donald Trump. But Delcy Rodriguez does not reciprocate that approval, does she?
No, very much so. And in fact, Donald Trump's line has hardened in the last few hours, because he's given an interview to The Atlantic saying that if Delcy Rodriguez, now the president of Venezuela, formerly Maduro's number two, doesn't do what America wants, she's going to find that she is on the receiving end of even tougher treatment that was handed out to Maduro. I mean, the reality is that they have gone in without any thought whatsoever about the day after. President Trump on Saturday engaged in that jaw-dropping appearance in which, and you could see it written on Marco Rubio's face at the time, much to the irritation of the Secretary of State, he started extemporizing about how the United States is now going to be running Venezuela. That Rubio had spoken to Delcy Rodriguez and had been told that she was going to do whatever the Americans wanted, which is fatuous. I mean, she leads a political movement that for the last 20-plus years has accused the Americans of being imperialists on the world stage and awful money-grabbing capitalists. She can't possibly overnight suddenly agree to do whatever Donald Trump wants because her political movement won't for a nanosecond tolerate it. So in Rubio's telling today, what President Trump meant when he said that the United States is now running Venezuela is that because the United States has got this embargo against sanctioned Venezuelan oil tankers, whether they're sailing into Venezuelan waters or sailing out of Venezuelan waters, the American armada will stop them and will interdict them and seize any cargo that is on board. Rubio's argument is that that alone means that the United States is now in charge of Venezuela because it's going to create a situation in which Delcy Rodriguez will be forced to do whatever the Americans say because the United States has got a stranglehold on the Venezuelan economy, the main lifeblood of which is the oil industry. Mm. Now, you know, none of that stands up to scrutiny because Delcy Rodriguez cannot simply cave politically. And the United States cannot enforce its will simply via an embargo.
People say that Donald Trump can't do this and he can't do that, and he goes ahead and does it anyway.
Well, and Secretary of State said today that the president is not afraid of putting boots on the ground if necessary in Venezuela. But he's also got a problem on Capitol Hill and with his own base, Nick. I mean, first of all, there are Republicans in Congress who were told yesterday that this was not about piercing Venezuelan sovereignty. So it was not an act of war, and there was no need for them to have been notified of these events. And then, of course, Donald Trump stands in front of the microphones and says, oh, absolutely, this was one of the greatest assaults on another country's sovereignty in the history of the world. So that completely undercut the arguments that the Secretary of State had been privately making to members of Congress.
Yes.
And then there's the question of the Make America Great Again base.
Right.
What does grabbing control of Venezuela have to do with America first?
And they are
struggling to explain that.
Yes, and how much of a parallel can be drawn between this, which was started by the Trump regime saying that, it's all about the drugs, which are weapons of mass destruction. They use that phrase. And Iraq's weapons of mass destruction.
Yes, well, absolutely. I mean, and on the drugs, the numbers, I think you and I have discussed this before, the numbers don't stack up. Donald Trump was saying yesterday that for every Venezuelan boat they've blown up, 25,000 lives have been saved.
Mm.
There are scores of Venezuelan boats they've now blown up. Last year, tragically in the United States, the number of people that died of drug overdoses was about 83,000. So on President Trump's numbers, that's fewer than four boats. Well, if they've blown up, I forget what the number is now. I think it's 35 boats they've blown up. I mean, the numbers simply don't stack up. He says we've saved 250,000 lives.
Sorry to interrupt, but it's the same man who said that he's reduced the price of medicines by 1,000%. What do we know of the supposed winner of the last election in Venezuela, Edmundo González Urrutia, and his left-hand woman, Maria Machado, the person who won the Nobel Peace Prize that Donald Trump yearned to get for himself?
Well, Mr. Guzman is in Spain and is reportedly in ill health. Now, I see that the French President Emmanuel Macron is saying that because he won the last election, he's the man who should be heading up some kind of an interim government in Venezuela, something that the Trump administration is not voicing any interest in. As far as Ms. Machado is concerned, to the surprise of many, President Trump at that press conference dismissed any suggestion that she had the juice to unite the Venezuelan people around her. He indicated that she wasn't in any sense nationally favoured by the people of Venezuela, which comes as a bitter blow to the Venezuelan opposition. And you know, one of the abiding questions tonight is, why is the United States not demanding the immediate return of these opposition figures to Venezuela? Marco Rubio was asked today, what are you planning? Are you planning elections in 30 days? And he said, no, it's much too early to talk about elections. Why have they left the Maduro regime in place while removing Maduro himself, but keeping in place other people that are wanted by the United States and that they consider Maduro's cronies? What is the next week going to look like, much less the next year in Venezuela, if you are not even talking about delivering democracy, and they haven't used the word democracy at all, democracy and a fresh election for the Venezuelan people? The amount of time he referenced oil yesterday, I think there were 40 separate references by the president to the need for American oil companies basically to take control of Venezuela.
Yes, you can't stop saying the quiet part out loud,
absolutely,
can he?
Absolutely.
Simon, just as an aside, Trump is also threatening to attack Iran at the same time if Iran, the regime in Iran, kills any protesters, which is a switch. Trump protecting protesters from an unpopular regime.
Threatening to attack Iran, and closer to home, renewed threats to go after Greenland. I don't know if you've seen the tweet that was put out by the wife of Stephen Miller, the Deputy White House Chief of Staff, a map of Greenland completely covered up by the American flag with the caption underneath it that simply read, "Soon." Tonight, the Danish Prime Minister has told Donald Trump in no uncertain terms to knock it off with the threats to Greenland. But they are really serious about this. He is serious about American territorial expansion.
Always good to talk to you, Simon. Thanks for that. Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent. So what do you make of all this? Good grief. Just when you thought it couldn't possibly get any worse, it does, by a large margin. 0345-6060-973, LBC.
LBC.
Craig's never shown an interest in beekeeping before, but that's the sound of him buying 2,000 worker bees rather than doing his self-assessment. Craig, you live in a sixth-floor flat. The deadline is 31st of January. Less distraction, more action.
Don't be like Craig. Visit gov.uk/self-assessment today. Payment support may be available.
Everything breakfast at Ocado. Save on yoghurt, cereal and get a great price on milk so you can splurge on eggs, even from quails. Perfect if you have the urge to eat a dozen eggs but you aren't that hungry. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Select lines only, geographical restrictions, minimum spend and charges apply. Offers end 27th of Jan. Terms and offer info at ocado.com/terms.
Hi, just leaving work now. Sorry it's a bit loud. Basically, so I was thinking we could get Mackey's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day, and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So, you in? Of course you are. Love you. Bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T&Cs apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
And it's interesting that three of the most recent countries that have been attacked by Donald Trump is Venezuela, Nigeria, and constantly talking about Greenland and threatening them. Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world. The largest oil producer in Africa is Nigeria. And one of the largest undeveloped rare earth mineral deposits outside China is Greenland. So, despite his protestations, it's not drug runners in Venezuela, it's not attacks on Christians in Nigeria, and it's not about national security in Greenland. It's all about the money. 0345-6060-973. Camberwell. Hello, Claudia.
Hello, hi. I just realised something as I was watching the strip on the news.
Yeah.
It said something about, it was going across, it said Putin, Donald Trump has said that it's not an invasion, it's an operation. This is the same thing that Putin has said from the beginning. It's supposed to be an operation, not an invasion.
Special military operation.
Yeah. So America's using the same words. So Trump is beginning to sound more and more like Putin. And, you know, I've heard it's been said that he admires Putin, and if he could, he would love to be a leader like Putin. And here he is now, behaving the same.
Yeah, so, him and the leader of China and the leader of Russia, quite the triumvirate.
Yeah, so now we've got European leaders, okay, who are afraid to say anything. We've got our government here, cowards, afraid to say anything. But it's the same thing that Ukraine is up against. It's the same situation. Who next? We've got China more and more provoking Taiwan, and this will encourage them even more. Yeah, and I think Trump's abusing his power as the superpower of the world at the end of the day. And I think it's going to backfire on the USA if they continue down this road, because at the end of the day, when China decides, OK, we've got a reason to go into Taiwan, what can you say?
Yeah, absolutely nothing. Well, nothing at all. Yeah,
and I think Trump's he's finding every excuse to invade a country. So, like you said before, whether it's Nigeria killing the Christians, Greenland or Iran if they hurt the protesters, he's just looking for something to cause trouble to gain control of what he wants.
And so, do you think that our Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, should actually be more vociferous in his condemnation with all but with everything that that involves? Because Trump doesn't take criticism at all, and he's bound to lash out.
Here we have Keir Starmer, yeah? All right? Who used to be, what was he, a barrister or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, human rights and what have you. You're telling me you're afraid to stand up? You're a man that stood up in courts.
Yes, but it's not him. Yes, but it's not his personal safety that he might be concerned about. It's the safety of everybody in this country. I mean, Donald Trump uses America as a weapon, and he don't take criticism from anybody very well. And he spends his entire life trying to get back at people who have criticized him or have done something that he has disapproved of, or presented him with an insufficient amount of flattery.
Yeah, because he's a dictator. So we're talking about a man who is clearly displaying dictator tendencies, personality. Okay, and this country, and Europe combined together can't stand up.
Well, there's different approaches from the different countries. Keir Starmer has called for international law to be upheld, which is clear. But he stopped short of criticising Trump's actions for the obvious reason, I think, that Donald Trump would just lash out. He'll start throwing tariffs at us again. He'll pull he's already pulled the deal that we supposedly had with America for investment. He's pulled that because he didn't like the... It's like trying to do a deal with the mafia. You think you've got an agreement, you shake hands and you walk away, and they say, oh, just one more thing. I want this, and this, in addition to the thing that you've already agreed. And hormone-injected beef and chlorinated chicken and all the rest of it is the thing that he is now demanding. But Keir Starmer emphasised that the UK was not involved in this operation, which is, I suppose, small comfort. By yesterday evening, the PM said that the country had long supported a transition of power in Venezuela, saying we regarded Maduro as an illegitimate president and we shed no tears about the end of his regime. So kind of sidling up to Trump there. Starmer said the government would discuss the evolving situation with US counterparts in the days ahead. Well, maybe they will take his call and maybe they won't. On the other hand, the governments of Spain, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Mexico and Uruguay put out a strong joint statement in response to what they termed the gravity of events occurring in Venezuela, saying that America's actions constitute an extremely dangerous precedent for peace and regional security and endanger the civilian population. In an apparent reference to Trump's administration's assertion that the US will run Venezuela and oversee oil production, the six governments also expressed concern regarding any attempt at government control, administration, or external appropriation of natural or strategic resources. That's the sort of edited version. So considerably stronger than Keir Starmer's message. But, I mean, do you want Keir Starmer to endanger this country in order to make a point to Donald Trump, who isn't going to take any criticism or advice from anybody? I mean, when has he ever done that? 0345 6060 973. Jeremy says, It's primarily the petrodollar that Trump needs. The US economy is in the toilet, so he needs the transactions for the Venezuelan oil to be in dollars. That has been a feature historically, that if any country decides to sell their oil in any currency other than the American dollar, then regime change, or at least an attempt at it, follows quite speedily afterwards. Paul says, we praise Donald Trump, the only man who doesn't bow down to all this woke... Oh, God, I'm stopping reading there. That's my New Year's resolution. Anytime anybody uses the word woke as an insult, I'm just going to stop reading. It's infantile and pathetic. 0345-6060-973. Right, more of your calls on this, and take a break for the news, after which we're going to take a... We'll have a small conversation about the British and French aircraft that have carried out a joint strike in Syria. 10:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
The defence minister of Venezuela is demanding the release of the country's president after his arrest and transportation to New York by the US military. Nicolas Maduro is expected to go before a court tomorrow on drug charges. The Home Office says law enforcement agencies are being given the power to remove phones from illegal migrants in the UK. A range of new offences are due to come into force tomorrow, enabling police to arrest people smugglers earlier. And an inmate's been charged with escaping from an open prison in Gloucestershire on New Year's Day. 39-year-old Aaron Thomas is now back in custody. Two others who'd absconded from HMP Layhill remain free. LBC weather, more snow showers for northern Scotland and coastal areas around the UK. Patchy snow will also push into parts of central and southern England. A cold night with lows of around minus 5 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026.
A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
The famous five are at home, and Julian could barely contain his excitement.
Why are you so excited? Asked George. Is it your birthday? Is it snowing? Asked Dick. Are we having treacle sponge tonight? Asked Anne.
No, said Julian.
It's the Great GWR Getaway Sale.
The Great GWR Getaway Sale is now on. Hurry, book before January 5th at gwr.com or on the app. Great Western Railway. Adventures start here. Terms apply. Selected routes only. Travel by April 10th.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, what are your thoughts about what's been happening in Venezuela to come? But let's talk about this for a moment. British and French aircraft have carried out a joint strike on an underground facility in Syria in the mountainous region near the ancient city of Palmyra in the centre of the country, says the UK Ministry of Defence. Major General Tim Cross, CBE, retired army officer, former advisor to the House of Commons Defence Select Committee and a military logistics expert, is on the line now to walk us through this. Good evening, Major General. There you are. Sorry about that. Yes, Major General. Hello.
I'm all right. You still there?
Yes, I am. My mistake. Sorry about that.
Not at all. Not at all.
Why are we bombing Syria?
Well, I suppose the easy answer is to say we're not bombing Syria, we're bombing the Islamic State rebels, in inverted commas, that are still, you know, pretty strong in Syria. There's been a change of government, of course, since the collapse of the last regime, and that the new government are working alongside, not just us and the French, but the Americans too, and trying to defeat, I think destroy is too strong a word, because you won't destroy IS completely in terms of an idea, but defeat the IS, who will still are still a threat, both within Syria and beyond the boundaries of Syria, actually.
Well, you've sort of touched on my next question, really. I mean, the idea of stamping out IS, is that achievable? Can you bomb an idea out of existence?
No, you can't. You can't. And it's an issue that I have to say I spent a lot of time talking about with various people on these sort of issues. You don't destroy an idea. So it's no good, as Israel said, they were going to destroy Hamas. You can defeat, you can degrade, you can undermine, you can do all sorts of things. But you have to win the battle of ideas with the majority of the people concerned with whatever it is that's going on. So no, you don't destroy IS. It's a radical, obviously extreme part of the Islamic faith. It's never going to go away, but what you can do is keep the pressure on, which is what we're attempting to do in Syria, and ensure that it doesn't gain strength again and become the problem that it was a few years ago.
But is that achievable, really, by almost by remote control? I mean, I know the pilots were involved, but it's 3,000 miles away. Apart from anything else, is that making us here more secure?
Well, I should say that there have been quite a few of these attacks over the last few months, several in September, using drones rather than manned aircraft. And, of course, it's not just us. We're doing this with the French, and the Americans have had a strike against IS recently, too. I do think it is important that we maintain... Mostly it's about intelligence gathering. What's the threat? Where is the threat? And what sort of resources are they pulling together? And this attack, of course, was against ammunition storage, underground ammunition storage. So you're constantly trying to undermine them, and they're undermine their ability to conduct operations both in Syria and elsewhere. So again, we're not going to defeat it. I don't think it makes the threat to the UK mainland, to our land here, any less or greater or lesser, to be honest. But it does reduce the threat within the Middle East. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And with what's happening with Iran at the moment, and they of course support both Hamas and the Houthis and, you know, various other groups around the Middle East, and including IS, then, it does help make sure that the threat is contained.
But, forgive me, but it's rather counterintuitive, isn't it? Doesn't this sort of action actually make it more likely that the supporters of Islamic State, or just Syrians who don't like the idea of their country being attacked by Western forces, taking action against us?
Well, there's an element of that, and there's always a possibility that there will be some who don't appreciate what's going on. But I stress that this will be in conjunction with the Syrian government, and the Syrian government will be doing their best to, we can have a long conversation about where the Syrian government currently is in terms of, bringing together all of the various factions that were there in Syria during the previous regime. But I think I understand your point, but on balance, to undermine the ability of IS to cause trouble within Syria and bring down the government and cause, casualties and so other things, I think is a sensible thing to be doing. It has to be. We have to recognize the limitations of it, and it is a fairly limited strike.
Yes, and yet the location of this attack was near Palmyra, which is one of the most important heritage sites on Earth, a place of rare Greco-Roman and Persian treasures and architecture. Is bombing it from the air appropriate?
Well, it was near Palmyra. I mean, you've got to remember that what IS did to Palmyra, and indeed other areas within Syria and elsewhere in Iraq and so forth, when they, they had that big advance those years ago. So this wasn't actually, I don't know is the honest answer. I don't know that it had done any collateral damage in that sense. But my understanding is that that's not the case. This was attacking an ammunition storage location, which is close to, but not actually in Palmyra.
And how do we judge the success of this kind of mission?
Well, through the intelligence gathering networks that we have, both obviously electronically and satellites and so on, you can see the sort of damage that was done. The real pictures were they'll be around by now. Actually, they'll have been conducting this gathering the intelligence, but you can see the damage you've done in terms of whether the ammunition that was being stored there has exploded and so on. There will be people on the ground who, presumably, again with the Syrian government, will be working hand in hand here, but there won't be people close to Palmyra, I don't think, at the moment, who are going to physically look at what damage has been done. You do a damage assessment in a number of different ways that the Royal Air Force, will always use in these sort of operations, and they'll come to some sort of conclusion. Now, I have to say, historically, you can easily overestimate the damage that you have caused. It has to be said. It's like trying to judge how many casualties have been caused in places like, you know, Ukraine and elsewhere. It's very, very difficult, really, to pin these things down. But you can get a reasonable assessment of how much damage has been caused through this strike.
And assuming all IS adherents have not been eliminated, what's the next step?
I don't think there's anything anybody suggested that this is going to ramp up into anything more than what we've been seeing over the last, well, since the change of regime. So over the last, I don't know, 6 to 9 months, it will be again, it will be intelligence gathering, watching what's going on, getting reports together, and deciding when there is a target that is worth attacking, worth dealing with. And that might be logistics and ammunition and so forth that we've done, on this strike. I don't think anybody is talking, well, certainly we're not talking about putting any ground forces or anything like that to Syria. We will be supporting the Syrian government in ways that, they want us to support them. But they're going to have to be the people who actually deal with the ground threat, if you like. And I think from my understanding and certainly the reports I'm seeing, that IS is still pretty strong. It's still a threat. And it's right that we should work together to contain it.
And what would you say to people who would suggest that, you know, it's 3,000 miles away, what's it got to do with us?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a perfectly sensible, you know, perfectly fair question to ask. The reality is that, you know, we watch these terrorist organizations and various organizations around the world that, you know, do cause an awful lot of death and destruction and so on, and you have to make a choice. You either want to stand firm and try and resist and help people out to deal with these sort of threats, or you say, we're not going to do anything about it. There are countries in the world, Ireland is one, that basically says we're not going to do anything involved in foreign policy that uses military action. That's not been our line as a country, you know, for a very long time, and you wouldn't expect me to say that I don't think it's the wrong thing to be doing. I think you've got to be careful about how you set about doing these things. And looking at the unintended consequences and the long-term issues is never easy. But I think we are right to help countries deal with terrorist threats like, be it the Houthis, be it the Hamas, be it people like IS. These are poor, bad organizations.
Yes, quite. But, I mean, do you not get a sense that we have appointed ourselves as world police?
No. I have to tell you that I think that's the last thing on our prime minister's. The bottom line is we are nowhere near the military power we were, even 15 years ago. We have a very capable military, but it is not what it was. And there's no way that we would be in any sense trying to police the world. We're doing this in conjunction with allies, which is always the case, obviously, with organizations like NATO. But we work very closely with the French and have done for a long time on these sorts of operations. But no, I don't think it's any suggestion we're trying to police the world in any sense. I've said it two or three times, but this is in conjunction with the Syrian government. They've asked for support. We provided it. And I think that's the right way to go about it.
Very good to talk to you, Tim. Thanks so much for your time. That's Major General Tim Cross, CBE, retired Army officer, former advisor to the House of Commons Defence Select Committee, and a military logistics expert. Right, let's go back to talking about what Donald Trump has achieved, I suppose is one way of putting it, in Venezuela. Tavistock, hello, Rose.
Oh, hello, Nick. I think you mentioned danger. I think we're in danger either way. It's the devil in the deep blue sea, really. But I think we have to stand up against this. We're going round the houses, basically. Everyone's rationalising what, in my view, is psychopathic behaviour. How can we accommodate him? Over and over again, we're accommodating. Which of his excuses is a lie? It's, in a sense, irrelevant. Trump imagines the unimaginable, and then he acts on it. Absolutely regardless of the consequences. And this is an amplification now of his usual power action. But international law scorned, smashed, basically.
Well, made irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And the euphemism regime change pops up for invasion. The typical Uber Alles speech adorned with childishness. Overwhelming American military, action not seen since, blah, blah, blah. Mm. It's a threat. We'll saying we'll overwhelm anyone at will. This man is capable of absolutely anything. And he's long talked already, hasn't he, of takeovers, Greenland, Gaza, Canada. He's intruded into nations, aggression in Nigeria, Iran, influencing our politics to effect regime change here and in Europe. What he's doing also is increasing the world picture we see, the ethic of if you can do it, you should.
Yeah, might,
meaning
it,
him
might
and
is
people
right.
like him. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And no one's challenging it. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, ICE thugs rampage. There's martial law for pretended crime waves. For me, it's too similar to the 1930s. Germany being ruled with an iron fist while Austria, Czech, Slovakia and Poland are invaded and occupied. I mean, everything he does, everything is a proclamation of power, unrestrained power. And I think it's compulsive. Yet we look for reasons. We muddy the picture. We say he has a point and miss the point. It's a precedent for unlimited action that's been set. And I just think we at least must stop the justification, stop muttering about drugs, oil. Mm. And
we,
also,
I think
which
we have
I've
to,
heard...
We have to stop pretending it's about anything other than money.
Yes, and power. And but you know, it's what it is. It's unlimited power and action, whatever it's for. And that's where... why it's so terribly dangerous. And I've heard this barely disguised admiration coming from people who are actually against him. You know, it's all irrelevant. And we've got to say the ethic of tyranny is no ethic. And that's what we're living under. And we don't accept the unacceptable. How far that's going to get us, I don't know. We have got to do something. We cannot just carry on. Oh, yes, come on, take over the world. Can we?
Well, we can't expect to invite a lion into the house and not expect to eat our face.
No,
Rose,
exactly.
Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Shambolic failure. That's all you can say about the government's attempt to try and stop those illegal crossings. Remember how idiotically Rishi Sunak said he would stop the boats? That was never going to happen. And Labour, well, now they stand accused of actually managing to get it almost worse. Steve's in Guildford.
The Labour Party is just tearing itself to pieces. And I'll tell you, I'll give you a prediction. This government will not see its full term. There will be a no confidence vote before very, very long, because everyone is just sick to death of all this. Wake up in the morning and their policies are akin to the headlines of the newspapers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. Probably will need some 2x4s on when I've got to take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
Find me somebody to love.
The Dream Sale ends Tuesday. Don't miss up to 40% off. Dreams. Love your bed.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
So among the countries that Donald Trump is threatening or has taken action against is Venezuela, and we know what the story is, but what do you think about what has happened? Maybe you are concerned about our own Prime Minister's reactions to that, but he's somewhat cornered, isn't he, really? Because after we decided to turn our backs on our nearest and biggest trading partner, then we are somewhat at the mercy of the American president. We've tried to, we thought we had a trade deal with him, but then, you know, pretty much the moment the ink was dry, he did his usual thing and declined all knowledge of it. And so we're sort of back to square one, still waiting to benefit from the kindness of that stranger. Exeter, Ian.
Yes, hi there. Can I just say quickly, I know I'm going to get shouted down here, but I do actually agree with some of the things Donald Trump is doing. And the reason why I say that is because he's building his country up at the same time keeping the ones in Venezuela, because let's face it, they have been into the drugs bringing into America. All he's doing...
No, Venezuela doesn't really send drugs to America. If anything, they send drugs to Europe.
But they've been having so many issues with Venezuela and the countries around it. I think what they're doing at the moment is, in a way, it's Trump's way of kind of taking control. And I'm sorry to say...
Taking control? Removing a leader of a country and then installing the vice president as his approved successor, Trump's approved successor. Mm-hmm. And then, when she didn't immediately fall into line, now he's threatening her with even worse than he just visited to Maduro. It doesn't sound very organized.
But there's so many people that have rang in and saying that happily they are they free from the past regime that was in control. I'm sorry, but if you listen back to some of the LBC, there's lots of people from Venezuela and other people who are saying we're so glad Trump's done this, because they're basically under this, like a slave system. They couldn't do anything with this. They had no money. We saw on our own TVs how poor these people were. And listen, at the end of the day, Trump's not I know he's not very liked at all, but at the end of the day, he's building wealth for his own country. At the same time, he will be giving back jobs to some of these people that have been so poor.
Donald Trump should invade this country then? Because it would be greeted with joy by about 30% of the population who are yearning for Donald Trump to come in and run this country as a dictator. So just because it would appeal to some, should he do it?
I'm not a fan, to be fair, of the present, our present government and what they're doing, because he's not got a backbone himself.
Well, is that a yes then?
Obviously, I live here. I wouldn't want him to invade our country. But what I'm trying to say is this. I'll leave you on this quote quickly. I watched a TV channel today, and unfortunately, it was a chap, probably a clever guy called Rees Mogg, and he said, if it wasn't for colonialism, these people would be running around with swords in their pockets and things. We have to be... The Christian church goes into these countries. I'm Christian. And in the past, and they've sorted these countries out that are rebels to the system.
You think that Donald Trump is on a Christian mission?
I don't want to put him in that kind of position to say, but I am a person that we need to start putting ourselves out there and helping at the same time taking back and taking away these criminals, if you know what I mean.
Right, okay. Not sure that that's what Jesus would say if he were here, that attacking another country just because you don't happen to like their leader is would be... But then I'm not a religious expert as such as yourself, Ian. Woolwich. Hello, Richard.
Oh, hello, Nick. I don't think you quite caught that guy going down the rabbit hole, did you? I have been in a state of complete shock since this happened. And, I mean, you've had some very eloquent correspondents, Simon Marks being one of them. I rate him really highly. But all I can talk about is my own emotional reaction to this. And that is the fact that I thought that the Trump administration was a joke. And I always sort of tune into your weekend shows and I enjoy the banter around Trump, and I feel like it's a joke. And the thing that's kind of caught me unawares, and the reason why I'm shocked, is that it's almost like this, in the middle, many Shakespeare plays have this moment where there's tragedy or comedy that suddenly becomes deeply sinister and tragic. And I feel like I've been caught unawares. And I feel like that somehow... this kind of thug has done something extraordinary, which I never imagined. I actually never imagined they were capable of. And and what I'm really feeling now is that we have got to wake up as a country. For too long, we've just been dominated by, you know, YouTubers in their kind of bedsits telling us how we need to kind of run our country. And that kind of led to this whole Brexit thing. And I know that's, you know, that's a little bit sort of out there. But I believe now, without question, the world order has changed. We are now in this kind of big stakes game, and we are not prepared for it if we are outside the European Union.
Yeah.
I think Starmer right now,
And I think he's made noises this weekend even.
Yes.
He has to begin to get us back into a political union again where we can actually become the fourth member of this triad.
It seems the worst time imaginable to be friendless and alone, bobbing about as a tiny island off the coast of Europe. And we cannot rely on America for anything anymore. That much is absolutely true, because Donald Trump will use America as a weapon against anybody that provides him with an insufficient amount of flattery or money or power or abasement or whatever it might be at the time. So we have to accept the new reality. America is not our friend anymore. Our nearest neighbors are much more reliable than he is. So we have to go towards them rather than relying on the kindness of that stranger.
Absolutely. And the thing I don't understand is, look, that administration, it's not a propaganda machine. In fact, it is still a joke. I mean, they couldn't even make the link between America First and their expansionist policy, which is what, of course, Nazi Germany did, and how that's why it became effective. They're not even there yet. And I cannot imagine that 30%, as you quoted, of people actually support Trump and see him as the strong man and the big... What, without even that propaganda machine, how has that got into their heads?
I think that the 30% I quoted was the people who support the Reform Party, and I can't differentiate the Reform Party from Donald Trump. They seem to be Britain's branch of the Trump cult. And the amount of times that I've heard people say, you know, this country would only be sorted out if Donald Trump took this country over by force and ran it as a dictatorship. They're yearning for it because they think that he will be cruel to the people they don't like. You only need to look at the people who are crying into their phones, who voted for Donald Trump on the social media sites, to know how that worked out for them. Thanks, Richard. 0345-6060-973. Claire in York. Hello, Claire.
Hi. Just to your earlier caller who said that, oh, well, Trump's, you know, helping out the Venezuelan people. What's he actually done? He's taken Maduro out and left everything as it was before. Mm. There is nothing better than before at all.
Well, it's worse. It's significantly worse because he's blockading the ports to stop Venezuela from exporting its one biggest asset, which is oil. So life in Venezuela has taken a turn down, not up.
Yeah, and I listened to an international criminal court prosecutor today, and he said that, you know, this claim from Trump that if it's not a legitimate leader, then you can arrest them and put them through another country's courts is absolutely bogus, and that's been previously widely denounced. Because then he said that Trump could, in that case, be arrested for the extrajudicial murders of the exploding the Venezuelan boats.
Yeah.
You know, how would that be seen? And it's very dangerous now for the likes of Russia, and I also think that it's very easy for people to say, oh, Keir Starmer should be criticising Trump. It's easy for us to criticise Trump, but to have on your head that if you do, you hold the responsibility of this country and all its citizens' well-being, because tariffs would seriously affect everyone, and would people then be saying, well, at least he spoke his mind? I don't think so.
Well, you know, America is as a country is our number one trading partner, and Donald Trump has an enormous amount of ability to do us tremendous harm should he wake up grumpy one day and decide to do it. And all the evidence suggests that that's exactly the kind of thing that he would do.
And it's not just tariffs that I think is on Keir Starmer's mind. I think it's Ukraine. I think he's very worried about Ukraine and upsetting Trump, because if Trump really goes with Putin wholeheartedly because he's annoyed at us and Europe, then Ukraine is just finished. It's absolutely finished. If he decides not to sell any more weapons to Ukraine, Ukraine is finished.
Well,
so for the likes of Keir Starmer,
Europe isn't powerless. So, but, I mean, at least we have that. And at least we have, relatively good relations with Europe. They could be better, certainly, because, you know, certain oily charlatans persuaded us, just enough of us, to believe that life would be better outside than inside. And that has been proven to be incorrect. Everything they promised turned out to be the opposite of the truth. I've run out of time, Claire, so, but thanks for that. What's really bizarre, and I haven't heard anybody mention this, is that the US security and military services actually did a simulation about attacking Venezuela, and they predicted that it would bog down into a forever war, another one of those. And yet he went ahead and did it anyway. And apart from the money, it seems that in America, Trump's troubles are stacking up. Inflation persists, jobs are down, stock market rally is based on a few companies who are betting massive amounts on AI, making them money eventually, with the attendant fears of a bubble and a crash. He's got terrible polling numbers for his popularity, the most unpopular president in living memory. There's infighting in the MAGA ranks now. People are still talking about Jeffrey Epstein. He said he'd be America first, but it's obviously Trump first, Trump family second, Trump donors third. America is way down the list, and the predominantly poor people who voted for him, they're at the very bottom. And he's now going out and trying to persuade them that prices aren't going up, that jobs are coming back, and which is the opposite of their lived experience. And just enough of them are still siding with him, but I guess that's the result of joining a cult. Plenty more opportunities to talk about this on LBC to come, but we are going to change it up in the next hour and talk about our Prime Minister. Keir Starmer warns his rivals that a leadership challenge would be a gift to reform. The Prime Minister faces a battle for political survival this year as Labour polling falls and reform tops those polls. Some Labour MPs have begun to look to others that could replace him, like Andy Burnham, the Mayor of Greater Manchester. A top pollster says that Burnham is Labour's best hope of keeping Farage out of number 10. Is he right? Is Keir Starmer right that chopping and changing leaders would bring chaos, the kind of chaos that we experienced during the dying embers of the Tory regime? Do you think that perhaps, though, Labour does need a fresh start? 0345 6060 973. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the leaders of Denmark and Greenland are urging Donald Trump to stop threatening to take over Greenland after his military action in Venezuela. They've been commenting after the US president told a magazine, "We need it for defense," and on the eve of an expected court appearance in New York of Venezuela's leader, Nicolas Maduro. LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks has been telling Nick Abbott some concerning rhetoric is coming out of the capital.
I don't know if you've seen the tweet that was put out by the wife of the Deputy White House Chief of Staff, a map of Greenland completely covered up by the American flag with the caption underneath it that simply read, "Soon." Tonight, God. The Danish Prime Minister has told Donald Trump in no uncertain terms to knock it off with the threats to Greenland, but he is serious about American territorial expansion.
26 of the EU's member states are calling for calm and restraint from all parties over the situation in Venezuela following President Trump's military intervention. The US Secretary of State Marco Rubio has denied Washington is at war with Caracas. The Home Office says law enforcement agencies are being given the power to remove phones from illegal migrants in the UK. A range of new offences are due to apply from tomorrow, which will also allow police to arrest people smugglers earlier. The government's now warning phone seizures will begin at the Manston short-term holding facility. A former pupil at a British school has been confirmed as one of the victims of the New Year fire at a bar in Switzerland. It's thought Charlotte Nidham was 15 years old. A total of 40 people died in the tragedy at Cron Montana, while 119 were injured. People have been paying tribute to the victims at the scene.
It's a quiet little ski village. I mean, usually there's lots of life. Now, since 3-4 days, we all very sad. It's like a horror movie, but in real life. I have friends in hospital right now and friends who die. I don't have words. It's just so hard.
State media in North Korea is claiming the country has test-fired hypersonic missiles. It says the regime is trying to assess its military operational capability regarding war deterrence. And in sport tonight, Aberdeen have sacked their Swedish manager, Jimmy Tellin. The club is currently eighth in the Scottish Premiership. LBC weather, more snow showers for northern Scotland and coastal areas around the country. Patchy snow will also move into parts of central and southern England overnight. We'll see a low of around minus 5 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Let's talk about Keir Starmer. He's written a letter for the Times, well, column actually. He says the past decade has been a warning. When governments chase shortcuts, the cost falls on ordinary families. This government chooses a different path, focused on renewal that lasts. He says, let's be clear, the charge that we should be offering simpler, snappier solutions is in fact a cynical political one from parties on the left and the right. They peddle the false idea that there is one simple solution to all of Britain's challenges. Leave the European Convention on Human Rights and all our problems will be fixed. Tax a handful of billionaires and everything will be magically paid for. It's wrong and it is dangerous. Luke Francis is, is the associate partner at Pagefield, the PR consultancy agency, and a former chief of staff and political advisor to Lisa Nandy. And he joins us on the line now. Hello, Luke.
Evening, Nick. Good to be with you.
What do you make of Keir Starmer's appeal to the nation?
So I think it speaks to a very clear sense in the Prime Minister's office, in Number 10, and in the team around him that it's not 2026 that's going to be make or break for his leadership, but it's going to be the next 5 months. And it's clear that they can't go on stumbling from crisis to catastrophe. And everyone is absolutely clear that these next 5 months are going to decide whether or not this leadership is able to survive. And I think what Keir Starmer is trying to do with his piece in The Times and also his sort of quite extensive media around this morning is to get back on the front foot and try and grab control of that narrative. I think it's not the first time we've seen one of these attempted sort of communications resets, but it's absolutely clear that the next 5 months will define this government and certainly Keir Starmer's leadership.
But he's right about chopping and changing, isn't he? I mean, it was absolutely chaotic in the dying embers of the Tory run. We don't really want that again, do we?
Absolutely. He's completely right. And I think the challenge here is as much about communication as it is about substance. And we just talked there about some of the messages that Keir Starmer used that piece to deliver. And the reality is it isn't the language in which people think. It isn't the language in which people speak to one another down the pub. And that's the real problem this government has, because there are some great policies that have been delivered that are going to reduce energy bills, that are going to introduce breakfast clubs and free school meals and really change the lives for millions of children across the country. We've got lower borrowing costs. We've had successive interest rate cuts. That means that not only mortgages are going to be lower, but also our national cost for borrowing is going to be lower, which hopefully frees up a bit more money for public services. We've reduced the NHS waiting lists. But we're not communicating that in a way that resonates with people. And Keir's absolutely right that the chopping and changing, the short-termism, the, you know, sticking plaster approach to policy has got us into this mess. But what people like Nigel Farage and Reform UK are very effective at doing is simply and concisely communicating the problem and recognising and acknowledging the frustration that exists in the British public. And the challenge for this government, the challenge for the Labour Party, the challenge for Keir Starmer is to find a way to communicate that far more effectively, because it's clear from the polling numbers that it's not cutting through. People aren't feeling that change. The Chief of Staff in Number 10, Morgan McSweeney, told advisers just before Christmas that 2026 needed to be the year of proof. They don't have 12 months. They have 5 months for people to feel this difference. And a big part of that is about telling people what this government is doing, so they know what they're looking for when they're looking for that change. Because otherwise, it's very easy to feel like things are getting worse, things are difficult. people are very often talking down the prospects of this country, and the mood needs to change in number 10. They desperately need to get on the front foot. I'm hopeful that this marks a reset for them in terms of their communication strategy, but it is a huge mountain for them to climb based on where they are at the moment.
Yeah, but it's entirely predictable. After 14 years of the Tories smashing the place up and selling off the family silver, it was going to take more than, essentially just a year. I mean, I know it's been a bit more than that, but that's pretty much what he's had. It's going to take way more than a year to put things back together again. It's much more difficult and long, takes a longer time to repair something than it does to break it. So, I mean, are we not just being completely unreasonable in expecting him to be a magician?
I think that's very fair. And I think, well, unfortunately, we are living in an age of growing popularity for populists like Donald Trump and Nigel Farage, who are very good at succinctly and concisely summarising what they think the problem is, and far less effective at suggesting solutions or even setting out a plan for how they would do things differently. So it is absolutely right that this government inherited a complete mess, and that public trust as a consequence of that and successive failures of Tory governments is at an all-time low. But we're not able to change the reality of the environment in which the government is operating. It is very difficult to turn that round. It is not a unique problem to the UK. It is across the world that people are losing faith in not just politicians, but in so many different spheres of public life. We're seeing, you know, attacks on our judiciary, attacks on our civil service, and it has undermined faith across the piece. So people actually don't believe that their politicians are able to deliver the change they promise, and often they don't even believe they're in it for the right reasons. And having worked at the coalface for more than a decade, I can reassure your listeners that the vast, vast majority of MPs, and I include Keir Starmer in that, are absolutely in it for the right reasons, and I think they are frustrated at how difficult and slow the delivery of change has been. But the frustration is in an attention economy where people engage with politics no longer in long-form interviews or sitting down to watch late-night political shows. They watch it in 30-second sound bites on Instagram and on TikTok. But the government's message isn't cutting through, and they're going to have to play the game to a certain extent, and they're going to have to change up how they're approaching this, because I completely agree it's going to take the full length of this parliament. They need the full 5 years to start to undo some of that damage, but they unfortunately aren't going to get that full 5 years. Voters don't switch off after an election and switch back on 5 years later to see how the country's doing. This is a day-by-day, hour-by-hour lived experience, and the government really needs to start shifting that narrative now, because May is going to be an absolute watershed moment, and if we see reform picking up councils, not just in Wales and in Scotland, but actually in London, potentially, you know, long-standing sort of bastion of liberal progressive politics, that will be potentially a moment at which Keir Starmer's leadership is brought into stark focus, and it's unsustainable for him to remain in post.
Well, what you're calling for essentially is for Keir Starmer's message to get more stupid, to sort of cut through to people who really don't know anything, who are persuaded by oily chances that the sun will shine brighter, you'll be richer and happier and better looking. If only we can get rid of those people.
So I wouldn't say it's about dumbing down the message at all. I think people like you and I, Nick, have the luxury of living and breathing a lot of this. We are immersed in the detail, and for the vast majority of the country, that just isn't their lived reality. These are people who are getting up early, going to work, coming home, raising their kids, wondering how they're going to make ends meet at the end of the month. And it is the responsibility of the government to communicate with those people in terms that resonate with them in the places where they receive their information. I don't think that's dumbing down the message at all. That's about adapting to a new reality. We aren't 20, 30 years ago where, you know, a column in the Times would reach 5 million readers. It doesn't happen that way anymore. Keir Starmer would actually be far more effective in spending time focusing on a social media strategy that delivers those messages to disaffected and disengaged voters who, I am absolutely confident, still have real reservations about Nigel Farage and Reform UK, but are increasingly of the view that they can't be any worse than it is now, which history tells us is absolutely not the case. But unfortunately, without a government that is on the front foot and, you know, not increasingly towing reform's line and allowing them to set the prevailing narrative and choose the areas of conflict on which they're going to develop policy, this government, for me, is talking far, far too much about immigration and not enough about where they're going to deliver real opportunity across the country. People are worried about their children having good, well-paid jobs that mean they don't have to move out to get on. People are worried about making ends meet at the end of the month. And we've seen, history tells us that when those things are a stark reality for people, immigration flies up the issue list for people. It becomes very easy to blame people who look and sound different for our problems when actually they are far more structural and fundamental. The Labour Party has an opportunity. We've still got 3 years to get back on the front foot, to tell the story they want to tell, to point to the change that they're delivering, and to fundamentally not just reject the narrative of Reform UK, but to set out a counter-narrative, which is this country is better, it is stronger, it is more agile, it is a world leader because we are diverse, because we are welcoming, because we are tolerant and embracing of difference. That is what, that is our strength, that isn't our weakness. And actually, I think that is a message that can resonate with people, but it needs to go hand in hand with policies that deliver that change.
It also needs to be heard. And that's the problem that the Labour government have, is that most of the media are determined to get him out of number 10. The offshore right-wing billionaire media owners of our newspapers, they aren't going to print anything positive about the successes of the Labour Party. They're going to try to nitpick anything they can to paint the opposite picture. And the social media giants are now, weirdly, on their side.
Absolutely. And I think the second part of that is the bigger issue for Labour at the moment, which is in declining newspaper readership numbers, more and more people are turning to social media to get their information. And, you know, we have seen how damaging that is and how detrimental that could be, particularly to young people who, you know, haven't got a very clear understanding of what information can and can't be trusted. And there is a handful of incredibly wealthy individuals who are in no way accountable, who are able to drive that narrative. But going back to what we talked about at the top, unfortunately, that is the reality in which this government finds itself. And the only option that I see available to them now is thinking about how they can use those platforms most effectively to reach those voters and reach those people. But actually, more than that, go out and challenge these prevailing narratives. I think issues like Venezuela are potentially going to be hugely damaging to Number 10's relationship with its backbenchers. I think we're going to see more infighting. And actually, it's incredibly difficult and incredibly nuanced. And listening to your callers previously, you know, the economic and military relationship that we have with the US is so important to our country and to our stability and to our economic growth. But people are looking to our Prime Minister to take a position here. And it is very, very difficult to balance that line and to walk that line as Prime Minister, when on the one hand, I don't doubt for a second that Keir Starmer is appalled by what he's seen the US do over the last 48, 72 hours. But he also understands that it's not necessarily in the national interest for him to go out in front of a TV camera and tell the country that he completely disagrees with Donald Trump, because we know he is an unstable and unreliable ally who is vindictive and petty and who will undoubtedly strike back at not just Keir Starmer, but at the UK. Yeah. And so it isn't in our national interest. But that is the frustration, that is the difficulty that they're facing.
All right. So if the Labour Party then switch leader, first of all, who should it be? And second, if Starmer's plan was for 5 years, to change direction now would mean that an incoming leader would only have, say, 3 years.
Absolutely. And, you know, the reality is I don't think the Labour Party should be thinking about changing leader now. And that's not because of any loyalty that I hold to Keir Starmer as an individual or any political ideology that I have that aligns with him. But that I really don't think it matters who's driving the car if it's going off a cliff. And at the moment, what we are lacking is any clear direction, any clear vision for the country that is being effectively communicated. Now, whether it's Keir Starmer, whether it's another leader, there needs to be that clear vision. It needs to be a roadmap for how the leader of this country will deliver real change and improve people's lives. Now, whether that is Keir Starmer or whether it is someone else, they have 3.5 years to do that. Now, I think the reality of changing leader is messy, it's difficult, it speaks to all of those things that Labour promised they wouldn't be in the last election. They were promised stability, they promised certainty, they promised grown-up politics. Now, if after 2 years the Labour Party renege on that promise and bring in a new figure, no matter how effective a communicator that figure is, no matter how popular they may or may not be in the country, and the reality is there aren't any Labour figures at the moment who would deliver an enormous swing in the polls. The problem is that vision, and actually that can be a collective vision, and it can draw on the strengths of all those people around the cabinet table, all those backbenchers, but it is a team effort, but it needs to be led from the top. I think Keir Starmer can do that. I think he has the ability to do it, but they need to be bold, they need to be clear, they need to decide on the direction of travel, and they need to be unwavering in its commitment to delivering it, and that's what's been lacking, I think, for these first 18 months.
Good to talk to you, Luke. Thanks very much for that. That's Luke Francis, associate partner at Pagefield, a PR consultancy agency, and former chief of staff and political advisor to Lisa Nandy. So, what do you make of the Prime Minister's travails? Is it worth changing him for somebody else? And would that somebody else actually deliver a significant change? Because is there much point in replacing him with somebody who would only deliver a small improvement in their polling numbers? 0345-6060-973-LBC.
Weekdays from 7am.
They come here because they know it's a soft touch.
Straight to the point.
How does this even add up?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
This is a Whitehall farce without any doubt.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey, up. Looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself.
Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
So Keir Starmer is saying that it is to be expected that it takes time to turn things around. I mean, the country is not a speedboat. You can't turn it around on a sixpence. It's more like an oil tanker. It takes an age. In reality, it's not been much more than a year that he's had to address 14 years of Tory destruction. So he's right about that. Is it just part of the common, the sort of modern malaise that we're just not prepared to wait for anything anymore? We've got no patience. We want everything to be delivered to us as though by a magician. Just wants to magic everything better. Do you think that perhaps he is fundamentally unsuited to the job, which was recently defined by a buffoon, a clownish figure waving his arms around in the front of the stage and cracking jokes? Boris Johnson. I mean, he's not him, for sure. But I thought that this country had had enough of clowns. 0345-6060-973. Liverpool. Hello, Samantha.
Hello there.
Samantha.
I was a member of the Labour Party for 40 years. Excuse me. And the more I see of Keir Starmer, the more I'm convinced it did the right thing to leave. It did upset me to leave the Labour Party, but I now think I couldn't be part of it anymore, and I'll never vote for them, I don't think.
But why? What happened that made you change your mind?
Well, my fear is reform. And I don't think the Labour Party are doing enough to, counteract the sound bites and the promises of reform. They're just charlatans, and the Labour Party need to really think about the way to stop them getting power, because so I think it's
is
a,
it
a
communications problem then? Is that what you mean? You don't hear them saying enough about what they've achieved and what they believe in, whereas Farage is constantly on the telly telling us that all of the problems in the country would be solved by if we just push those people back out to sea.
Well, unfortunately, there's enough people swallowing Farage's promises, and I'm really worried that they could form a government. And I think the only way to stop them is to have proportional representation. And the Labour Party will never agree to that. Every conference that I, you know about, they did vote for proportional representation. Mm. But the actual people in power don't want to give up their power.
Well, I think the power is that's the key word there, isn't it? No government that is in power would want the prospect of giving up some of that power, and that would be what would happen with proportional representation.
Yeah. So, you know, he always talks about the country first. Well, I won't swear on the radio.
Thanks.
That is a load of tosh.
Right.
You know, he doesn't mean it. Otherwise, they'd go for proportional representation. That's the only surefire way to keep out reform.
So, you've decided not to vote for Labour anymore. Have you decided who you are going to vote for?
Green.
Right. I had a feeling you were going to say that. Now, he really has had a significant effect in a very short period of time on his party. They went from what was traditionally the 3% party, the Greens, they were there or thereabouts. Now they've trebled that and more in just a matter of months, really. And I think the one thing that Zach Polanski has been particularly successful in is reaching people on social media. So we're back to communicating again, aren't we?
And he's putting forward socialist principles, but people don't seem to mind it coming from him. I don't know why they hated it so much from Corbyn.
Yeah. All right, good talking to you, Samantha. Thanks for that. 0345-6060-973. I mean, do you agree with that point about proportional representation? Should essentially the centre-left parties unite to keep out a Trump-aligned reform party from governing, which, if they did get into number 10, they would be governing the country with a very small minority vote if the current polling stays as it is. And, you know, many commentators are suggesting that reform are perhaps peaking too early. And their big thing, of course, is immigration, which got significantly worse, as they would describe it, after their signature policy of Brexit. After Brexit, immigration went through the roof because we could control it before Brexit. But after Brexit, those levers of control were taken from us. So everything that they persuaded us that would happen if we left the EU was the opposite of the truth. Very interesting column the other day in the Times by Fraser Nelson, who is not known to be a lefty, eco-liberal hippie. He said the Prime Minister says very little about immigration, despite polls showing it as the voters' main priority, but this could be the year that it is finally tamed, perhaps even reduced to net zero. That is to say, no more arriving than leaving. Figures for how many arrive in Britain in recent years have been almost anyone's guess. The Tories, delighted with their new Brexit controls, decided to loosen things a bit. Annual net migration trebled to almost 1 million, the so-called Boris wave. Net migration at 204,000 in the year to June last year, after a year of Keir Starmer, is less than a quarter of the Boris peak. Now, that might come as a surprise to some people, probably because the Labour Party have not been crowing about it. Fraser Nelson says the big surprise is the outflow. Immigrants are leaving at the rate of about 400,000 a year. He suggests that many of them are perhaps naturalised Poles heading back to their now booming homeland within the EU, of course. So the thing that concerns people the most, or so they say, is perhaps being fixed. But you wouldn't know it if you only paid attention to the mainstream media and social media, of course, because they seem to be singing from the same hymn sheet, really bizarre bedfellows, Rupert Murdoch and the Mail owner and so on, being as one with those Silicon Valley tech bros. But they all seem to want the same thing now. And they all seem to be yearning to get Nigel Farage into number 10. But if his signature policy of complaining about immigration is something that is going to be fixed, there won't be. It will be at zero. Immigration numbers will be zero very shortly. Then either the people that say they're going to vote for Farage because of immigration, either they actually are lying about that, or it's not immigration that is concerning them at all. It's the fear of it. And that's what Nigel Farage is stoking. It's not the numbers, it's the fear of the numbers. And you might say that that's borne out by the makeup of the people in the areas that Reform have had such great success. Clacton, for instance, is, I can't remember the exact number, but it's something like 98.3% white British. There are no immigrants in Clacton, and yet they voted for him anyway. Gareth in Cheshire says, it comes down to credibility, and Starmer doesn't have any. He's reneged on his party leadership manifesto. He's repeatedly had to U-turn in government and simply doesn't have the qualities to lead this country. The Labour Party have an existential challenge. They must push for a new leader or face electoral oblivion. Well, who then? Who would change things significantly? Because it can't just be a slight uplift if you change the leader. That's not going to work. It had to be a significant change. And as for U-turns, I mean, people do talk about that a lot. We all U-turn all the time. If we didn't U-turn, then we'd still be eating rusks. 10:30 on LBC. We're going to take more calls about this, but just after this news break, we're going to get an update on that Swiss resort fire. 11:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Tim Daly.
The leaders of both Denmark and Greenland are urging Donald Trump to stop threatening to take over Greenland after his military action in Venezuela. They've been commenting after the US president told a magazine, "We need it for defense." A former pupil at a British school has been confirmed as one of the victims of a New Year fire at a bar in Switzerland. It's thought Charlotte Nidham was 15 years old. And state media in North Korea is claiming the country has test-fired hypersonic missiles. It says the regime is trying to assess its military operational capability regarding war deterrence. LBC weather, more snow showers for northern Scotland and coastal areas around the country. Patchy snow will also move into parts of central and southern England, but it will be dry and cold elsewhere. We'll see a low of around -5 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hi, babe. What a day. Fancy staying in tonight instead? Mackie's calling my name and I saw you can get £5 off if you spend £20 on the app. So, you in? Of course you are. Okay, bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. Save £5 when you spend £20 on food and drink via delivery. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Service and delivery fees apply. Valid once per week, 1st to the 31st of January. Participating restaurants. Serving times apply.
Right then. Who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders.
Book clubbers.
Are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Nothing beats that just booked feeling. Because when you book a Jet2 holiday, you start dreaming of pool days and seeing the sights. Get ahead for summer with just a £25 deposit per person for a limited time only. Choose from our best rooms and hotels and save £200 per couple. Nothing beats a Jet2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Astronatural protected. £25 deposit available from 19th of December to 12th of January. Subject to availability and conditions.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, as you can imagine, Switzerland is still reeling from the events at that bar in Kranz, Montana on New Year's Day. Let's talk to Julia Hamilton, correspondent for CGTN, which is based in Zermatt in Switzerland, and she is on the line now. Julia, good evening.
Good evening.
What do we know about the owner of the bar? Because I believe that he is somebody with something of a history.
Yes, that's correct. So the owners, there are two owners of the bar, a couple. They are originally from France, and they've been living in Crans-Montana for a while, from what we know. And they own actually several properties, bar and a restaurant in Crans-Montana. And yes, so there have been reports of him having a little bit of a history, and but yeah, this hasn't been officially confirmed by the police, or this is not part of the something that the police is discussing right now, because they are still investigating the case, and they've actually opened a criminal investigation against the managers of the bar. And they are charged with negligent homicide, negligent bodily harm, and negligent arson. And of course, there are also questions about the age of the revelers who were inside the bar. And so, yes, so many questions are being asked to, and of course, the backgrounds as well on the owners of this bar.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at a report in the Daily Mail, which claims that he has spent time in prison for fraud, kidnapping, and false imprisonment, which doesn't relate necessarily to what happened at the bar, but it's not a good, it's not a particularly positive story to paint of him.
Yes, absolutely. It's not a positive story at all. And of course, that will raise questions about the safety and exactly the kind of how much did they comply with the regulations. Of course, there will be so many questions asked to them. And for this reason, they are under criminal investigation by the police, who will be asking them about the use of those sparklers in the bar, the use of the acoustic foam on the ceiling. They will be asking all these questions. And of course, they will be checking just how much they were complying with all of those. And yes, we should be getting hopefully more background information about them as the police tell us more details about the investigation.
There were some confusing stories about how people could have got out of that bar, and initially it was thought that there was only one way out. Is that still the understanding?
Actually, the police said during the press conference a few days ago that they have been speaking to witnesses and to the owners as well, to the managers, about the layout of the place, because that the layout of the bar is actually also, of course, part of the investigation to determine why so many people died inside and why they couldn't get out of the bar in time. And so from what we understand is that the bar is actually laid out on two levels. The basement where the discotheque was happening, that's where the fire took place, that's in the basement of the bar. And then there was an upper level with a bar and live music, and also there's an outside terrace. So so we don't quite know whether the stairs were narrow or too narrow, or what the sizing is. So the police are investigating this as well. But yes, there have been some reports that the emergency door was not was locked. And also that, yes, many questions for the layout of the bar, and why there were not fire extinguishers, for example, used immediately. So, yes, many questions remain as the police are investigating.
I've also heard that the owners refurbished the bar recently themselves rather than getting professionals in to do that job. Is that true?
That's right. So there have been some reports about the place being refurbished recently. And actually, the owners, the manager of the bar, he gave a very brief interview to a local newspaper here in Switzerland. And he insists that they have been checked several times in the past and that everything was done according to the law. So at least from their side, it seems that they insist that everything was done properly. But of course, we will have to see what the police tell us at the end of their investigation.
And you mentioned the age of some of the people there. Some of them were particularly young. Was it legal in Switzerland to be allowed into a bar at that age?
That's right. So the youngest victim is actually a 14-year-old girl. So, and indeed, the police have actually identified all of the victims, all 40 victims from the bar, and they say that they range in age from 14 to 39 years old. Most of them are quite a few of them under 18, and quite many of them also in their early 20s. So indeed, a very, very young crowd that was there. And in Switzerland, actually, there is a federal law which says that people aged 16 or more can drink wine or beer in a bar. And at the age of 18, they can drink spirits. And in the local Valais canton, the rule is that after 10 p.m., a 14-year-old can be inside the establishment, but with a legal guardian. So, of course, we don't know whether those 14-year-old, that 14-year-old girl was there with someone, or either 15, 16-year-olds, if they were there with somebody, an adult, or if they were just there by themselves. We don't know these details yet.
So how many victims have been identified yet? Do you know?
Yes, well, actually, recently today, the bodies of the 40 victims, they have been identified by police and the families have been notified. And, of course, the police are respecting the privacy of the families. So we know that the age of the victims range from 14 to 39, and they are also international victims as well. So most of them are Swiss. There are also Italian, French, Romanian, Turkish, Portuguese, and Belgian nationalities. And also we understand that there is a citizen of the UK and Israel as well in that crowd. We don't know if that's in the injured statistics or in the victims, but very international victims crowd indeed.
I know it's not the most important issue, but Crans-Montana is a holiday destination. I would imagine this has hurt the town quite badly.
Absolutely. Crans-Montana is actually a very popular skiing resort. And of course, now in January, late December, early January, it's the peak skiing holiday season. So indeed, there are many local people, Swiss people who are coming on holidays, people from neighboring countries, many Europeans. That's why the crowd was so international in that bar. So indeed, this time is particularly busy in Crans-Montana, and that's also why there were so many people in that bar that night. And I was in Crans-Montana for several days when this tragedy happened, and it was very quiet initially. But then as the days went on, you can also see that life kind of goes back to normal there. People are back to skiing, people are back to going to restaurants and bars. And so, of course, for many, it's a big tragedy, but also life kind of goes on.
And have the authorities given a timeline of their investigations?
Well, we don't have the timeline yet, but the investigation is still ongoing. We do know, for example, that on 9th of January, so next Friday, there will be a national day of mourning in Switzerland. So we don't know if we will get all the results by then, or if this investigation will continue for several more weeks. We don't know, but because they said initially that it will take them days or even weeks to identify all the victims because of the severity of their burns. But we have all the identifications now on the fourth day since the tragedy, so we should hopefully be hearing more details in the coming days.
Thank you, Julia. Thanks for your time. That's Julia Hamilton, correspondent for CGTN, based in Zermatt in Switzerland. Now, back to Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer told Laura Kunzberg on, earlier today, he said, under the last government, we saw constant chopping and changing of leadership of teams. It caused utter chaos. And it's among the reasons that the Tories were booted out so effectively at the last election. Nobody wants to go back to that. It's not in a national interest. We know from that evidence that what happens if you go down that chaotic path, and I'm not going to take us back to that kind of chaos. Well, he's right about that, isn't he? So would it actually benefit the Labour Party and the nation, by extension, if they did start to chop and change and do the typical Labour left-wing thing of fighting amongst themselves, such that eventually, come the day, a right-wing party will step nimbly over their writhing form? 0345-6060-973. Glasgow. Hello, Al.
Hi. I think the starting point is at least we have a sensible adult government in power just now, rather than, you know, Liz Truss or Johnson or whatever. So yeah. I think it's a good starting point. So I think we've got to keep the ship in an even keel. The Tories are out of it, really, because they're rebooting and it's too early for them to get into power again. Reform, I just view as nasty, and I think we should just not want them anywhere near power. Leadership-wise, as far as Starmer's concerned, my default would be to keep him. But I think we need him to communicate a little bit better about what the risks to us are and what he intends to do about them.
Do you think, do you think he can actually do that? Because communication is not his thing, really. I mean, we've sort of become used to, particularly with Boris Johnson, we became used to an act, a clownish act. Farage has got it too. He's got an act. You know, neither of them are really like that. But they've got this this performance that goes down really well with people because it's immediate and it's kind of relatable, I suppose. But Keir Starmer is not that at all. He's like your bank manager. He's a sort of a dull functionary. And so it doesn't really matter whether the message is good. It's can he actually deliver it?
Yeah, you're right to a degree, I think, in that maybe he's not a personality like Johnson and so forth. But I think he just needs to stand up and, you know, in front of the camera and just tell us how it is. And I think the best example I saw recently was Mark Carney.
Right, yeah.
Because he just said, look, okay, the Americans don't want our... aluminum. yeah. So we're just going to sell it to the Europeans. Do you know what I mean? He said it's going to be a challenge, but this is what we intend to do about it. We may have, you know, a rocky road, but this is our strategy.
Well, that's a good example because Mark Carney is a bank manager, of course,
yes.
And he was set to lose that election. The right wing Trump aligned party were going to win it in a runaway. And he prevailed, probably by presenting himself as the not the Donald Trump party. And he sort of, it's almost as though he went into a phone box and came out as Superman. This dull guy suddenly was riveting. So if he can do it, then maybe Keir Starmer can do it too.
I think he can, and I have to give him the benefit of doubt. I mean, they're not the same people, and they're going to have their own strengths and weaknesses. But I think he can do it, and it's partly, I think he needs to set out the stall, really, partly because what he says would actually determine whether I think he should stay or go. Mm. And so, for example, when you talk about the challenges to the UK, I think, you know, there are big issues going on right now, and I think he needs to... you know, maybe air a little bit more of his attention onto these big issues like, you know, US and Ukraine and that sort of thing.
But that's foreign policy. People don't tend to warm to foreign policy successes, do they? Unless we're at all-out war when everybody goes into a step behind the leader. You know, going off and having a success at a COP conference or standing shoulder to shoulder with Zelensky and so on, it doesn't really cut through like tax cuts, for instance, or breakfast clubs for school kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that part of what he can do is make sure he's got a good team. So I think collectively, and this is something that you said, the Labour Party have got a little bit of trouble with sometimes. But I think it's really as a team they've got to say, well, this is what's facing us right now, whether it's internationally or locally or whatever. I think they've just got to put together a story, really.
Yeah.
And actually, when you mention domestically, I think it's easy to see, you know, Ukraine problem with Trump, all that kind of stuff. I think domestically, one of the huge issues I think you'll need to deal with is regulations, disinformation, election interference,
right.
Party funding.
Well, he seems disinclined to take those people on because they, again, those tech bros, are they've got Donald Trump in their corner. I mean, it was very smart, I suppose. I mean, there's a hint of evil about it because they used to be considered, liberal, small L, and then they became very right-wing aligned when it looked as though it was in their commercial interest because Donald, you know, give money to Donald Trump and he will repay you in kind. And that's precisely what they did. And so they're not on our side anymore.
I think he's got to take a brave pill. I mean, if he doesn't get to grips with the regulation aspect of this and disinformation and election interference, we will end up with Farage. Yeah. Oh, sorry, we could end up with Farage. And that has huge consequences, negative consequences. So the sooner he deals with that, the better.
All right. Good talking to you, Al. Thanks for that. 0345-6060-973.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Shambolic failure. That's all you can say about the government's attempt to try and stop those illegal crossings. Remember how idiotically Rishi Sunak said he would stop the boats? That was never going to happen. And Labour, well, now they stand accused of actually managing to get it almost worse. Steve's in Guildford.
The Labour Party is just tearing itself to pieces. And I'll tell you, I'll give you a prediction. This government will not see its full term. There will be a no-confidence vote before very, very long, because everyone is just sick to death of all this. Wake up in the morning and their policies are akin to the headlines of the newspapers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks for accountants and bookkeepers. Why? Because having time to advise your clients on how to grow their business
can become tricky.
So new QuickBooks AI gives you tools
to make client collaboration seamless. It's amazing.
I was going to say that. Outdo it with Intuit QuickBooks.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Hi, just leaving work now. Sorry it's a bit loud. Basically, so I was thinking we could get Mackey's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day, and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So, you in? Of course you are. Love you. Bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yeah, so we're talking about this subject that keeps coming up over and over. Should Keir Starmer step aside to allow somebody else to take over? Or so, should somebody take over by force if necessary? Not actual force, but you know what I mean. Is it time for a change, or can Keir Starmer turn things around? And I, to my eyes, there has been something of a change in the quality of communication from the Labour Party, and it's happened, I think, just before Christmas. They put out a press release that really sort of struck through. It sort of listed the things that they have done that are improving people's lives. And most of the messages, if they had said them before, got completely lost because the right-wing press are not on their side. They're determined not to paint any positive picture of the government, which is why you just get negative, negative, negative all day long. And unfortunately for, well, I guess all of us, really, the social media kings aren't on our side either. They're on their side. So they'll push whatever keeps our eyes glued to their social media sites, which mostly, they've determined, is making us angry. And you don't get angry at positive stories. Tariq in Woking, hello.
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know where to start. There's so many topics you're talking about, but I understand you want to talk about Keir Starmer.
Yes, please. Yes, go ahead. What do you think?
Yeah. I was thinking about Keir Starmer. I've sort of known him for a little while myself.
You've known
when
him?
When he was the DPP.
Oh.
You know, when he was the Chief Crown Prosecutor or something.
You worked with him?
I was working within that organisation
okay.
at the time. But, you know, he's quite pompous, really. I mean, he's a strange character. He's got no sort of interpersonal skills, as you probably might have gathered by his mannerisms. I mean, you mentioned something about, you know, Labour's improved. I don't think they have improved. I mean, with the recent Venezuela thing, I mean, Keir Starmer was asked about, you know, what his views were, and he's held back.
Well, of course,
I mean,
he did.
Used, I mean, to be a human rights lawyer.
Well, yes, he held back because of the fear of retribution from Donald Trump, obviously.
Yeah, well, that may be, but at the end of the day, he is a man of his own sort of, character, or he's a man of his own person. You know, he doesn't need to, be concerned about Donald Trump.
No, he needs to be concerned about the country.
What's the worst that Donald Trump can do to England?
Are you kidding? What's the worst? Well, he could say, I'll put 100% tariffs on all of your goods and thereby sink our economy.
Well, that's what he may do. But look what happened with India, Gandhi, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, the guy sat down and started weaving his own clothes, you know, and stopped buying, clothes from Lancashire, which caused a lot of problems with the mills. I mean,
Terry, what on earth are you talking about? You think that the Prime Minister of this country should attack Donald Trump, who is known to lash out wildly at any suggestion that somebody is anything less than showing fealty to him, just in order to, feel better about himself?
No. I mean, he needs to stand up to him and tell him, you know, that certain things that he's doing is wrong. You know, he can't go around doing
regardless of the consequence to this country.
No, I mean, if he did that, he would have other people behind him, backing him.
Who?
The rest of Europe, perhaps, you know?
The rest of Europe, perhaps. Yeah, but Donald Trump... okay, all right. I kind of get it. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me, but we could go around and around and wouldn't get anywhere. It doesn't make any... it's just silly, really. I mean, we live in the real world, and we've got to deal with Donald Trump. And we know what happens when people stand up to Donald Trump. He spends the rest of his life and 100% of his concentration on trying to get back at them. You look back at his history, and that's all he's concerned with. Revenge. Richard Branson said it once. He said he had a meeting with Donald Trump. He said it, and forgive me if I got the quote wrong, but he said something like it was the most dispiriting meeting that he had ever had with anybody. And that Donald Trump just the entire time was talking about he wanted to get back at this person and he wanted to smash this other person into the ground who had criticized him and somebody else had made fun of him and he wanted to get back at them. And that's what he's like. So as America is our number one trading partner by country, of course we have to tiptoe delicately around him because he's like a baby with a machine gun. It's just daft to say that, you should damn the torpedoes and call it like it is. I mean, I think that what Starmer did say was, I've got the quote here, he said he called for international law to be upheld. Okay, well, that's putting it mildly, but there it is in a nutshell, which is what Donald Trump has not done. So, I mean, that is standing up to him without actually, picking a fight. You don't want to pick a fight with the biggest bully in the playground. Bath, hello, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
With regards to Keir Starmer, I'm actually really amazed by the... I mean, listen, I'm not... You know, he's a flawed human being. We all are. But the people who are now trying to drag him down in the Labour Party... were the same people who got him elected. And it's, what does that say about their judgment? I mean, they're never called into question. Like only a few years ago, they were hailing him as being the next best thing since sliced bread.
And well, the thing is, were they, though? Or was it just the least bad of the available options?
Well, the thing is, he got them elected.
Yes, but I wonder if that's his trick, that was his major contribution to the cause, getting them elected.
But what's the alternative, Nick? I mean, after he goes, I mean, we're just going to hand the country to Nigel Farage.
The option would be to replace him with somebody who could actually make that not happen.
I don't think that's going to happen. Who? What? Andy Burnham?
he's one of the names. Emily Angela Rayner is one of the names. Yes.
Now, honestly, I'm telling you, once they start pulling each other apart on the circular firing squad, it's finished.
Well, that is Labour's thing, the circular firing squad.
Yeah, that's what they do. And the thing is, they don't realise that, like, you know, they need to get to the next election. And, like, you know, if I just think it's so disparaging, you know. I mean, listen, I don't agree with a lot of what's happened under Keir Starmer.
No.
But the thing is, though, what I would say is we've had 15 years of austerity, 15 years of this country being dragged down to the ground. Well, we don't even have roads without potholes in it. Our schools are falling apart, left, right and centre. And yet, over six, seven, nine months, everyone's going on about it's Keir Starmer's fault. How is that possible?
Well, as I said before, I think that we lack patience now. We've got a very small attention span, and we expect everything to be magic to us instantly. We've sort of regressed to a childlike state where we just can't... we've got no patience to wait for anything anymore.
But Nick, my warning to the Labour Party and some of the members and some of them that I know is that get rid of them at your peril. Because I tell you, what's going to happen is they're going to lose the next election if they get rid of them.
I think they all have to pull together as a team. Absolutely. I mean, at the very least, they have to all start saying the same thing over and over and over again. Start treating us like start treating us as who we are. People of very little attention. I mean, this letter that he wrote in the column, rather, that he wrote in the Times, way too long. Too long, didn't read, would be most people's reaction to it. It has to be much more concise. They have to tell us what they're going to tell us, then tell us it, and then tell us what they've just told us. And keep it short. Be more Zach Polanski. I mean, not necessarily in the policies that he is espousing, but just in the way that he is espousing them. I apologise for using the word espousing twice in the same sentence. Right, there'll be plenty of opportunities to talk about this to come on LBC. Sorry I couldn't get through to all your calls. But coming up after the news, Tim Spector, a nutrition expert, says more people than ever are using weight loss injections, but not enough is being done to change their diet. He says that while weight loss reduces the risk of many diseases, failing to improve diet leaves people vulnerable to illnesses. Spector is concerned that the NHS and the government are failing to educate patients on nutrition. Are you on weight loss jabs? If you are, have you changed the way you eat? How have weight loss jabs changed your life? 0345 6060 973. Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight. Donald Trump has warned the interim leader of Venezuela, Delcy Rodriguez, she needs to do what's right after warning she would protect its natural resources. He's given an interview after the U.S. military intervention, which saw President Nicolas Maduro seized, taken to New York and imprisoned. Professor of Political Science John Polgar-Hekmovich has been telling LBC Washington expects cooperation from Ms. Rodriguez.
I think that the Trump administration is betting on Delcy Rodriguez, the ex-vice president, now interim president, in part because she can control the loyalty of the military and can help contain the chaos, so to speak.
President Trump also used the same interview to make new comments about taking over Greenland. The leaders of Denmark and Greenland are now urging him to stop making threats. Humberside Police has released the name of a second person who died off the coast of East Yorkshire on Friday. The bodies of 45-year-old Sarah Keeling and Mart Ratcliffe, who was 67, have been recovered. 15-year-old Grace Keeling remains missing. Officials in Switzerland say they've now identified the remaining 16 victims of a fire at a bar on New Year's Eve. They've now been able to put names to all 40 of the dead who'd gone to the Constellation in Kron, Montana. The Switzerland-based journalist Julia Hamilton has been talking to Nick Abbott on LBC this evening.
The manager of the bar, he gave a very brief interview to a local newspaper here in Switzerland, And he insists that they have been checked several times in the past and that everything was done according to the law. So at least from their side, it seems that they insist that everything was done properly. But of course, we will have to see what the police tell us at the end of their investigation.
A man's due before magistrates later on today, charged with murder following a suspected stabbing on New Year's Eve. 25-year-old Anthony Junior Murray was arrested after the death of 23-year-old Joe Burton at Bury in Greater Manchester. And an inmate has been charged with escaping from an open prison in Gloucestershire on New Year's Day. 39-year-old Aaron Thomas is now back in custody. Two others who absconded from HMP Layhill remain free. LBC weather, more snow showers for northern Scotland and coastal areas of the UK. Patchy snow will also move into parts of central and southern England, but it will be dry and cold everywhere else. We'll see a low of around minus 5 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Tim Spector, who is a nutrition expert, has said that more people than ever are using weight loss injections, but not enough is being done to improve their diets. Let's talk about this with Jane Deville Almond. She is president of the British Obesity Society and an independent nurse consultant, and joins us on the line now. Hello, Jane.
Hello, Nick. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. So are the weight loss jabs being used as an alternative to addressing people's behaviour? Are they just eating the same stuff that made them fat in the first place, just less of it?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what's happening. And the thing is, I mean, we can presume that a large proportion of people who are taking GLP-1s haven't been eating a healthy diet. Otherwise, they wouldn't need the injections. So what's happening with a lot of patients who I speak to, because the drug itself, it increases satiety, so you feel fuller much quicker, and in fact you don't even feel hungry. So when they are eating small amounts, they tend to eat the food that they like, you know, cream cakes, biscuits, crisps, rubbish. So although obviously they'll lose weight, they're not getting any nutrients, they're not getting any protein, they're not getting any of the good stuff. So they lose muscle mass and, you know, you can see it in lots of people. I can start to recognise now the Wegovy look. And, you know, you can see that people have lost muscle mass. And the problem is, the minute they come off the drug, your body is actually conditioned to try and get you back to the weight that you were, because, like, obviously that's, you know, millions of years of conditioning, so you don't starve to death. So the minute you eat anything, it goes back on, but not as muscle, usually as fat. So it's really important that people who are on GLP-1 actually, like, change their diet completely and eat, like, a healthy, nutritious diet.
So the diet that they had before may have had a certain amount of vitamins and minerals that they need, as well as the fat and the extra calories that they didn't. And they're swapping the good stuff for a concentrated diet of all of the bad stuff and thinking that it's doing them good because they're actually losing weight.
Yeah, and we focus so much on weight loss rather than healthy eating. You know, everyone's concerned about weight loss, but we know, I mean, people yo-yo. I mean, I've been working in this industry for 25 years, you know, people lose weight, they gain weight, they lose weight, they gain weight. You know, if they can change their eating patterns and behaviours forever, the likelihood is that, you know, they'll lose weight and then keep it off. And I think there isn't enough publicised, and Tim's absolutely right, there isn't enough publicised about what a healthy diet is. And I mean, I've trained nurses and doctors over the years, and even though we're medically trained, that doesn't necessarily mean that we understand what a good nutritious diet is. And, you know, you can look around. I mean, obviously, there's lots of nurses who, you know, struggle with their weight. There's lots of doctors who struggle with their weight. And we hardly ever hear anyone saying, you know, what is a good diet? I mean, you know, do you know what a good diet is?
Well, yeah, I find it surprising that people say that. I mean, the government, for instance, is saying that they're concerned that people haven't had the right education about nutrition. But how much education do you need to know that you eat vegetables and fruit and maybe a bit of meat, if that's your thing, and perhaps some fish, pasta, that good stuff, and you don't fill up on biscuits and crisps? I mean, doesn't everybody know that?
No, it's really difficult. I mean, it is so simple, isn't it? I mean, I've been saying to people over the last 25 years, if there's a label with more than two things on it, you know, don't eat it. You know, if it's wrapped in plastic, don't bother eating it. You know, make food from scratch. Buy fruit, veg, meat, you know, whatever your thing is, and cook it from scratch. But of course, the majority of people I work with have no idea how to cook most things anymore because everything gets bought pre-packed. It's all ultra-processed foods. You know, people don't even realise what ultra-processed food is, really. You know, they buy bread. They don't look at the labels. You know, there's 50 different things in your bread. You know, it lasts for 3 weeks. I mean, that clearly has got a lot of rubbish in there. Do you know what I mean? They buy ham that's wrapped up in plastic and it's, you know, the sell-by date's another 3 months away. I mean, you know, that kind of ultra-processed food, we need to encourage people not to eat it. And everybody says, oh, I haven't got time, you know. But the reality is, you know, what's more important than giving your body decent fuel?
But don't you find it extraordinary? If you turn the television on, pretty much the only thing that is not people deciding which property they want to buy or programs about about people murdering each other is people cooking dinner. I mean, it's practically 50% of the shows on television. So it's not a lack of knowledge, surely.
Well, I think it's lifestyle, isn't it? And it's not actually just food, you know. I mean, things like hydration, you know, people are drinking fizzy drinks all the time. You know, I go shopping and honestly, I'm usually incensed by people's baskets because they've got like, you know, 14 bottles of like, you know, fizzy pop for themselves and the kids. And I think, why are you drinking that? You know, it's absolutely stuffed full of rubbish. You know, sleep, you know, people don't get enough sleep. Portion controls, people eat far too much. You know, people aren't physically active, you know, they drive everywhere and, you know, they go to the gym and get the escalators up to the gym and you know, that kind of thing. They don't manage stress. And so it's all those things that, you know, are a problem as well. Mindful eating, you know, people sit in front of the TV and eat stuff they don't even know what they've eaten. And so, you know, I think what Tim's really saying is, you know, we focus so much on people losing weight, but what we need to do is focus on people living a more healthy lifestyle, you know, a very balanced, healthy lifestyle.
I just find it astonishing that this is still a message that people are trying to get through, because it seems my entire life people have been saying, you know, and then the numbers go up and down, you know, eat three vegetables a day, eat five vegetables a day, whatever it might be, eat a lot of veg, eat a bit of fruit, get up and walk around once in a while. I mean, I've heard that my entire life, and that people are still, I don't know, willfully refusing to take that on board. I mean, you could say it's a lack of education, but I mean, let's be honest. It's not a lack of education. It's the presence of willful stupidity.
Well, and in many ways, you know, we've got an NHS that seems to address everything. So it doesn't matter how people live their lives. The NHS is there to pick up the pieces. And, you know, we've now got this drug, you know, people are just going to take the drug. I mean, people don't have to work at anything anymore, do they? And, you know, I, as I say, I'm completely astounded to think that we're born with one body and it's got to last you a lifetime and people don't look after it. Really surprises me, like you. I mean, I've been working as a nurse for 52 years in obesity for the last 25, 26 years. And I cannot believe that people are getting bigger and people still aren't eating a healthy diet. In fact, they're eating a worse diet probably now than they were in the 70s and 80s.
So, well, absolutely. Yeah, most certainly. I mean, we're much bigger than we were in the 1970s. You look at a crowd picture in the 1970s and you'd be hard pushed to spot the fat person. Now it's completely the other way around.
I showed some nurses a picture of some children in year 10. So children like age 10 having a medical. and just a routine medical in a school in the 1950s. And I said to the audiences, you know, what do you think's wrong with these children? They all said, oh, they're anorexic. They were ordinary children. They were ordinary children. And we've actually lost sight of what is an ordinary size.
Yes.
And we've lost sight of what is ordinary for our bodies. And I'd like to reiterate, it's nothing to do with how people look. I mean, the bottom line is, if your frame, your body frame, is built to carry a certain amount of weight, and you carry double that weight, your body frame isn't going to be able to cope. You're going to have knee joint problems, you know, hip problems, back problems. You're going to, you know, heart problems. It makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, if you had a car that sits four people, you wouldn't put 10 people in it, would you? And expect it to, like, drive around at 100 miles an hour for the next 50 years.
And so people have now they've fallen on this thing as an easy way to tackle a difficult problem, which is their own behaviour. It's being treated like a magic trick.
Yes, and I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, obviously it's absolutely brilliant for lots of people. I mean, I'm seeing people losing 6 and 7 and 8 stone, but what they're going to do, they're going to stay on it forever? Are they going to carry on paying £200 a month, or, you know, have it on the NHS? Or are they ever going to come off it and then expect to suddenly learn to eat properly? I mean, the reality is, you know, 3 meals a day, bit of exercise, cut out all the processed foods, cut out all the sugar and the rubbish drinks, and you'd probably be okay. But people, I mean, we're overwhelmed, aren't we, with adverts everywhere. You walk into town and everywhere they're cooking, you know, sausages, hot dogs, hamburgers, food, donuts. You know, we've got this smell the whole time around us, and people find it difficult.
But people find it difficult. I mean, I think we're perhaps being a little too kind here, aren't we? What on earth happened to self-control?
Do you know, honestly, I get into trouble for saying it, don't I? That's the trouble. You know, the minute I say anything like this, you know, I have people trolling me on the internet saying, you know, I don't understand and all their issues and things like that. But the reality is, you know, I personally don't mind what people do. And, you know, patients come to me and they say, oh, I'm doing this for you, Jane. And I have to say to them, no, don't do it for me. I don't mind. I don't care. I'm not bothered whether you're fat, thin, whether whether you're ill or you're not ill. You have to be bothered about it. And you're absolutely right. I mean, if someone hasn't got the capacity to look after themselves and make themselves feel well, then nobody else can do it for them.
Mm. But this is not the case with children, though, is it? Because parents treating their bodies badly is one thing, but children don't know any. Well, they may know better because they may be more in tune with the messages their body is sending them, but they're being overwhelmed by all of this rubbish that their parents are sticking in their faces. I mean, that really amounts to child abuse, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, there have been cases of child abuse used against parents who've given the children too much food. I mean, I've worked with kids, you know, I've worked with a 10-year-old or 11-year-old who was 27 stone. You know, God. Exactly. You know, his legs were bowed. He was we know that if we've got one parent who's obese, then you've got a 50% chance of, you know, a child being obese. If you've got two, then it goes up to 75% chance, because obviously, you know, most people who are, you know, overweight, it's probably because their diet isn't great. And if their diet isn't great, the kids' diet won't be great. Mm. So if they don't do it for anybody else, they should do it for their kids.
Yes, absolutely. That they can't see themselves that have a problem is one thing, but their children are right in front of them. I mean, they can surely see that. But let's talk about
They don't notice it.
It's extraordinary. I just don't.
They can't see it. They don't notice it because they don't see it in themselves, and so they don't see it in their children. Amazing. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, let's talk about the effects of the actual thing itself. It's a crash diet, isn't it? And I thought crash diets were supposed to be bad for you.
They've done lots of research. Apparently, you know, if you go on these 600 and 800 calorie controlled diets, that obviously they've got these shakes that've got all the nutrients and everything your body requires. So you're not going to, you know, go without vitamins and minerals that you require. That obviously works, and it brings down people's weight and reverts their diabetes. So there's nothing wrong with crash diets, but you are right. I mean, what in fact does, and this is what seems to, like, I don't know, I don't see how people can't see this. It's not the drug itself. Well, obviously it is. It's the drug that makes you stop eating. So it's the fact that you're not eating anything that helps you lose weight.
Yes. Yeah, it's
and
like
so
calories in, calories out. It's as pretty much as simple as that. Apart from what you've alluded to already, is that the body sets itself at the heaviest that it has been, and always
yes.
wants to return to that and weight because it doesn't know you've got a full fridge. It doesn't. Your body doesn't
exactly.
know you're going to have lunch, dinner, and tea.
No, and that's right. And really, I think I read somewhere years ago, and I've heard like some professors saying this, that you need to keep your weight off for around 5 years and maintain it for your body to see that as its new set weight.
Well, I was going to ask you about this because that's the magic trick, isn't it? That's
yes.
the goal, is to reset your body to want to a new weight equilibrium, which is lower than it has got.
Exactly. And that's the thing, you know. So when people, you know, I'm always saying, like, it whatever your weight is now, don't get any bigger, because your body will, you know, like, you know, if you're overweight, well, and you can't lose any more weight, fine, but don't get any bigger. You know, make sure you weigh yourself, because, you know, when you get up to 18 stone and 19 stone, that is what your body will always try and get up to. I've worked with truck drivers, you know, I've worked with guys who've lost 11 stone, 12 stone. I go back a year later and they've put on 14 stone.
God.
You know, and it's because your body, it's a natural reaction, because our bodies are very clever. I mean, science is, you know, it's developed in such a magic way that your body never wants you to starve and starve to death. So the minute you go on a restricted diet for a month, the minute you have one biscuit, your body thinks, oh my God, she's not going to eat again. So I'm going to pop that biscuit in and store it as fat, so that, you know, if she goes on another restricted diet, I've got some fat there to, you know, use up. And so that's how your body works.
And just finally, are you concerned that people are taking this privately, that they're buying it off the internet rather than taking it supervised by a doctor?
I'm concerned that people are taking it, like, just really to lose a few pounds, because, you know, at the end of the day, this is a relative, I mean, obviously it's a safe drug at the moment, it's relatively new, you know, who knows what's going to happen in 10 years time, what they're going to discover and find. I mean, why anyone would want to take a drug if they don't need it, I don't know. But for those people who do need it, I think, you know, it's important that you get it prescribed by a professional, a medical professional or a pharmacist, and you managed, and you not only take the drug, but you also do all the other things that you need to do with the drug.
Very
which
good.
Is eat healthily, exercise,
yes, yeah.
You know, change your lifestyle.
Right. Good to talk to you, Jane. Thanks very much for your time. That's Jane Deville Almond, president of the British Obesity Society and an independent nurse consultant. So I've never actually met anybody who's on these jabs. So I'd be interested to hear of your experience and whether you're taking them because you were prescribed them or whether you decided that you just want them and are buying them privately, and what the difference perhaps is between the two. I mean, does the GP actually insert him or herself into your life to track how you're doing, or do they just give it to you and let you get on with it? And on that subject of education, do you think there's really an education problem in this country, that people don't know what food is good for them still? And if you're on it, what side effects have you noticed? And if you're on it and you've come off it, what happened then? 0345-6060-973 LBC.
This is LBC.
Hello, this is Mummy Phone. We're on holiday with an amazing beach. She's asked me to record her voicemail because she said if anyone hears the way I pronounce Menorca, they'll agree how important it is that we spend time together. Undisturbed.
Take your holiday seriously. British Airways Holidays. Atoll protected.
The famous five are at home, and Julian could barely contain his excitement. Why are you so excited? Asked George. Is it your birthday? Is it snowing? Asked Dick. Are we having treacle sponge tonight? Asked Anne.
No, said Julian. It's the great GWR getaway sale.
The great GWR getaway sale is now on. Hurry, book before January 5th at gwr.com or on the app. Great Western Railway. Adventures start here. Terms apply. Selected routes only. Travel by April 10th.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
So we're talking about these things with a horrible name, semaglutides, and more people than ever are using these weight loss injections. But, says a leading nutrition expert called Tim Spector, and this was reported in the Times yesterday, he thinks that obsessing over weight is missing half the problem. He says keeping diet preferences the same, still eating harmful, high-processed foods that put you, that made you overweight in the first place, really messes you up if all you're going to do is take these jabs and then simply eat less of the food that got you ill. So, is it a question of education? Do people still really are not know or are confused about what kind of foods they should be eating? I mean, all the evidence does suggest that people eat them anyway. But is it because they don't know what they should be eating? Or is it just because they can't be bothered to take care of themselves and just eat what they like? And I wonder to what extent that eating food that's bad for you is similar to taking or becoming addicted to drugs, to kind of fill a void in your life, to perhaps, you know, give yourself a bit of happiness where there is that where otherwise you would be lacking that. Because there is evidence to suggest that people don't become drug addicts because they like the drugs. They become drug addicts to sort of quell the noise of the misery or the dissatisfaction with their life, and they fill that with the pleasure that they get from whatever they're taking. And you could say that food is certainly, or a certain type of food is certainly addictive. 0345 6060 973. Kingsbury. Hello, Colin.
Oh, hi there, Nick. Great show as always.
Thanks.
You're a regular, whatever I'm doing, 10 o'clock now.
Oh.
Stop and switch on the radio.
Thanks.
I'm a new convert. yeah, I was just going to say, like, it seems odd that the government still needs to tell us how to eat properly when, I mean, we've known for, well, since the 70s, you know, I'm an old codger, but since the 70s, I suppose, you know, how to eat healthily and eat fresh fruit and veg and plenty of seeds and nuts and get a wider variety of things in your body as you can.
Yeah.
You know, and when they say eat the colours of the rainbow, yeah, try and, you know, try and eat as many colours as you can. Make it. I love cooking, and you know, I the presentation of mine, sometimes it looks, I think I could take a picture of that. It's got so many colours. but I mean, the point is, like, do we really need to be told? I mean, we've been, as you said, you know, you, when I was listening to your talk with a nutritionist, you know, you were just echoing my thoughts, you know, do we really still need to be told? And is it partly laziness, I wonder? I mean, I know we're all just working and, you know, killing ourselves to pay the bills, but really, can we not put half an hour aside to make a fresh meal?
Right, because people will spend half an hour going to the supermarket to buy a meal that has already been...
half an hour for their delivery,
right.
You know, their burger. You know?
That's true.
I mean, you know, and as I said, people say, but I can't cook, you know, and I think, well, you know, the basis of any, most of my meals are fried onions and garlic and a bit of, like, you know, I did a massive veg stew the other day and it was like the old Italian, you know, base for onions and celery and carrot fried
yeah,
up.
I'm no expert cook, but I know that it is a piece of cake. All you got to do is
five ingredients together and have a
exactly,
lovely meal.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, it's not really that.
As opposed to if yes, as opposed to if you buy one of these pre-made foods,
yeah,
then it won't have five ingredients. It'll have 25.
Yeah.
Most of which you can't pronounce.
Yeah, and they actually say we don't eat that poison. we never put that poison in our body. we just wouldn't. You know, everything they eat is fresh.
It's Italians, fresh. Is that what you
said? Yeah, Italian,
right.
And a lot of Mediterranean cooking, actually. You know, they all grow something in their garden, no matter what, you know.
And the difference is obvious to see, because we are, think, the third or fourth most overweight obese country in the world. And Italians and the French aren't... maybe not the French, but the Italians certainly aren't remotely as overweight as we are.
Yeah, if you're going to feed your kids chicken nuggets and, you know, burgers and chips all the time. I mean, I know kids want that kind of stuff, but I have it as a treat now and again. I treat myself. I like sweet things, and I still, you know, I got a massive tub of halva the other day and demolished it in a couple of days. but, you know, I like to treat myself.
Well, every now and again, what you fancy does you good, but not all the time.
Yeah, and a bit of exercise. You know, everyone knows. Just get a bit of exercise. Don't use the car everywhere. You know, if you can walk down the shops for 10 minutes, if it's a 10-minute walk, do it. You know, you'll feel so much better.
But I wonder if we got to the point...
Everyone knows this stuff,
don't they? I wonder. Well, you would think so. But I wonder if we got to the point where people think, it's not my duty to take care of myself. That's for the NHS.
Almost. Yeah, and I can always take a pill for it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I sound like I'm blowing my own trumpet, but it's only because the way I grew up, and I've cycled since I was a kid, and my weight has been the same since I was a teenager, and I see these blokes with man boobs and big guts, and I think, oh my God, you know, okay, my face looks worse than Keith Richards, but my body is, you know.
Yeah, there's not much you can do about
it.
Do about your face. That is true enough. All right, good talking to you, Colin. Thanks for that. Kerry in Essex says, I've been on a GLP-1. That's semaglutide, I guess, a GLP-1 for 18 months, and have totally focused on getting the right nutrition, mindful eating, and exercise. My medication provider has given me fabulous advice, as has my GP practice. I've worked incredibly hard while on the medication. Oh, and I've lost over 5 stone. Wow. Well, it certainly does work, doesn't it? I just wonder what the effects are when you come off it. Because as the nurse that I was talking to suggested, they say that 5 years of keeping your weight at a lower level will reset your body to accept that level. What the problem is with a lot of people, they have, and why people do diet after diet after diet and it doesn't work, is your body wants to get back to its heaviest, because your body doesn't know that you've got a full fridge. 0345 6060 973. More of your calls on this to come, but let's take a break for the news headlines with Tim Daly.
Donald Trump has warned the interim leader of Venezuela, Delcy Rodriguez, she needs to do what's right after warning she would protect its natural resources. He's given an interview after the U.S. military intervention, which saw President Nicolas Maduro seized and taken to New York. Humberside Police has released the name of the second person who died off the coast of East Yorkshire on Friday. The bodies of 45-year-old Sarah Keeling and Mark Ratcliffe, who was 67, have been recovered. And officials in Switzerland say they've now identified the remaining 16 victims of a fire at a bar on New Year's Eve. They've now been able to put names to all 40 of the dead who'd gone to the Constellation in Crans-Montana. LBC weather, more snow showers for northern Scotland and coastal areas overnight. There'll be patchy snow as well, pushing into parts of central and southern England. Cold everywhere, with a low of around -5 degrees.
This is LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Badges are earned, not bought. I'm former Harlequins and England rugby captain Chris Robshaw, and I'm here to tell you the JQ7 has arrived.
The JQ7 has everything to prove. It proves the range with a super hybrid system with up to 745 miles driving range. Engineered for driving confidence every day. Discover the JQ7 for yourself. Find your closest JQ dealership online. Specification may vary. Range based on WLTP data, dependent on individual driving conditions.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yeah, we're talking about weight loss jabs and what you have to, or what it is suggested that you do while you're taking them, primarily to change the behaviour that got you overweight in the first place. Not to just eat less of the same food and be delighted that the weight is dropping off you. Stratford-upon-Avon. Hello, Vicky.
Hello. I did weight loss jabs for 8 months, and it was the most revolting thing that happened to me. I stopped my love of food. My husband cooks, my son cooks. I am a very lucky girl. I am cooked for. And it ruined half of my life, which was food.
Now, do you think that what might be beneficial is to not think of food as a pleasure, but just fuel?
No, never. Some people see it as a food noise. I don't. I see it as a joy. And it ruined a whole load of joy for me.
I can understand that. So what effects did the jabs actually have on you?
I couldn't eat.
No, I mean, did you lose weight, though?
Yeah.
Right.
Lots of weight.
And what happened when you...
Much prettier, much lovelier, much more fabulous. But I just came out of it thinking, I just don't want to feel like this anymore because right. It's ruining my life.
And so did you put weight back on when you stopped taking it?
I haven't put any weight back on.
Oh.
Because it shrunk my stomach. So it did a good job.
Huh. So you've actually changed your behaviour since... Right.
Well, it hasn't changed my behaviour because I still love food. Mm. It's just the way I look at food is different.
Right.
So I'm giving the positive angle to the food jabs that they can actually change your life.
As long as you're prepared not to enjoy dinner anymore. Got it. Okay. Thanks, Vicky. Manchester, Renee.
Hello, my love. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Happy New Year, if it's not too late.
I guess not. No, Happy New Year.
Right. My story, basically, I was 25 stone. I'm 65 years old now, and I've lost 11 stone
wow.
on Monjaro. I've always had a food problem.
Yeah.
Had a lot of problems in my life. My mother died very young. My father came from the Holocaust, so we had a lot of issues that we never dealt with.
Right.
And it brings to your life, you think the food is your comfort, it's your friend,
yes.
it's your anaesthetic.
Right.
It's not what you're eating, my darling, it's what's eating you.
So right? When you lost the weight, did it coincide with you changing what you ate?
Yes, and also I don't buy what I can't eat, right? It's an addiction. It's like cocaine. It's something, you know, if you had a credit card, you'd go somewhere, any shopping precinct, travel centre, anywhere, and you'll max it out. If you haven't got one, you can't go out. You can't. My whole way of eating and buying is different. I make my own soups, vegetable soup, chicken soup, anything that's natural and healthy. Remember caveman?
Caveman food,
remember caveman?
Diet, yeah.
When you see caveman, he ate, he took berries from the trees, he hunted and he fished. He didn't go round to a burger joint and order
and
whatever.
And he also wasn't eating all the time. He didn't have three meals a day. I mean, some days he didn't eat at all. There were periods of no intake at all.
It's become too easy. We've got these modern smartphones.
Too many easy calories.
Yes.
Yeah. So how do you feel having lost that weight?
Oh, I feel like a new woman.
Really? Well, that's good. Renee, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for that. I I'll read a couple of messages, and then we're going to get an update on the weather. It has been, you can't have failed to notice how blooming freezing it is outside, so we'll check on how long we're going to have to suffer from this. Penny says, I go to a gym, I am overweight, and I just started the jab. So far, there is no difference. It's not changing my mindset, which is what I need. It would be cheaper to put people in rehabs than give them the jabs, which are temporary. Huh. Well, stick with it, maybe. Maybe it just takes time. Right, so the weather, then. Let's address that, shall we?
This is LBC with Nick Abbott.
Well, it certainly has been particularly cold of late. Let's talk to the weather forecaster and broadcaster John Ketley about this and his predictions for our immediate future. Hello, John.
Good evening to you, Nick.
It was quite the surprise to open the curtains the other day and see the snow deep and crisp and well, not very deep, but crisp and even right enough. And what's odd is that it's still there in London, where it's been sunny for quite a few days in a row, and you'd have expected it to go already, wouldn't you?
You would, really, but it's very, very cold air. You know, it's coming down all the way from the Arctic. We don't normally see this, especially these days, where we seem to get such mild winters. But this particular airstream is coming all the way down from the Arctic, and it's clear, very clear air. You can see the, you know, we've got this new moon, the full moon, I should say, at the moment, and it's really large and clear, and it just shows you just how cold it can be, even these days in the middle of winter in the UK. And so we did have a little bit of snow even in the south, but the heaviest snowfall so far has definitely been across the northern half of Scotland, and it's still piling in tonight as well. And we've got further snow showers coming in through Northern Ireland, Wales, into parts of the West Midlands, Northwest England, and the West Country. So it's likely to get a little bit worse before it gets better. I think really? This cold weather's staying with us for the time being.
Yeah, it's like our weather is stuck. Do you remember at the beginning of last year, we had two periods of about a week, 2 weeks perhaps, where we had no sun at all. It was a total grey out. It was as though the weather had been stuck in place. It sort of feels like that now.
Yeah, it's all to do with the jet stream, really. I mean, we've got this cold Arctic air at the moment feeding in these snow showers, and it's very cold, it's very blocked. You call it blocking because the jet stream doesn't want to move. It's a typical pattern of weather, even in the winter, is for the jet stream to pile across the Atlantic from west to east, and it brings in these rain bands and such like as that. So it's mobile. But at the moment, and on the situation that you're mentioning there, sometimes it becomes a little bit blocked. It becomes more longitudinal than latitudinal, if you like. So things are not moving in from west to east. They're going from north to south or not moving at all. So that's what we've got again at the moment. There's cold air coming down from the north. And there are these little complications. Every now and again, we get these little perturbations in the jet. And that's bringing these further snow showers for the next 24, 36 hours or so.
But I've seen in just after that we're going to get much more cloudy conditions. Is that right?
Yeah, things are gradually changing this week. It's going to be a slow old process because I think you've got to say that for the northern half of the UK, the cold weather is really pretty stable. It's going to be with us for much of this coming week. And every now and again, although it may well turn to rain and sleet, the colder air digs back in again from the northwest, so it will turn the rain back to snow. That's on the Pennines, for example, up into much of Scotland. There will be further heavy snow at times for much of this week. But there will be these drier, brighter interludes. And certainly across the southern half of the UK, much of southern Britain, there will be bands of rain and some strengthening winds from time to time. So we are going to see some pretty wet and windy weather later in the week in particular. I think on Tuesday we'll start to see just a slight increase in temperature, so I'd call it less cold to begin with rather than milder. So instead of temperatures, say, on Monday between 0 and plus 3, that's all it's going to be, it'll be more like 3 to 6 degrees once you get through to Tuesday and Wednesday. And later in the week, parts of the south, especially the south coast, could see temperatures briefly up around 9 or 10 degrees. Wow. It's a sign that we are seeing these temperatures changing as the week goes on.
Right.
But the thing is that when the cold weather blocks us, gets stuck in a rut, as you might say, when the cold weather is here for a while, it does tend to block off these milder conditions. So it will take a long time for things to change throughout the country.
Now, you said that it might get up to 10 briefly. So does that imply that it's going to go back down again? Because if it stays like this for a considerable number of weeks, then we're going to start It's going to start to look like a record cold winter, which has followed a record hot summer.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what the figures would have suggested, that it was a record hot summer. It really wasn't, was it? I mean, in the sense that the highest temperature was about 6 degrees off the maximum ever seen a few years ago, 40 degrees. I think last year we only got about 33 as a top temperature. It was because we had such warm conditions for weeks on end and very warm nights as well. So it was a mean temperature that was very high. Yes, I mean, we are seeing colder conditions. I don't think in the end it's going to be a record breaker by a long way, because you only need to go back to those record temperatures which have been sub-zero, really, going back to years like 1962 and other ones in the 80s and early 90s when it was very, very cold indeed. I don't think it's going to be anything like that, but it's certainly a very, very, very cold start to the new year.
One of the things that you meteorologists look at, now, and I know precious little about this, but I know that it is an important indicator of what's to come, is the El Niña and El Niño. What do we know about them as far as the forecast looks?
Well, I think we've gone into a sort of neutral state. You know, for a few years, two or three years, actually, it was this El Niño effect, and it was bringing these higher sea temperatures across the Pacific, and all that was introducing much milder, much warmer weather throughout the year, basically. But things have changed now. It's gone much more neutral. So things have really gone back to where they would be for most of the time. And I think, generally speaking, we are expecting more blocking of the jet stream coming in from the west, much more likely to see these colder, drier interruptions. But at the same time, the milder winds and stronger jet stream will return, and we are going to see in the end, at the end of winter, we'll probably look back and say, well, it was slightly colder than normal, but of course it was a mild December, and then you'll probably get some milder weather coming back through February. So, you know, the figures after 3 months of wintry weather, the figures will probably look very neutral, probably right bang on average, and nobody will particularly remember it in years to come.
And as far as you can see, can you give us a forecast, please?
Well, in the short term, we are seeing these cold conditions. You know, it's got to be emphasised that it's going to be very icy, very slippery in places for Monday. There will be more snow settling. The colder weather is gradually moving away as we go through this week. Still the threat of snow on the uplands of northern England and some heavier snowfall for much of Scotland at times. But on the whole, the process is going to be, through January, that we are going back to normality, in the sense that we'll see bands of wind and rain rather than spells of cold and snow.
Thanks so much, John. That's weather forecaster and broadcaster John Ketley. Now, briefly back to the conversation we were just having about weight loss jabs. Gavin in Carlisle wants to make a point. Hello, Gavin.
You're right. I've spoken to you about this in the past, not about weight loss jabs in specific, particular, but about weight loss. And there is this lack of education. You asked that before. And it's this point about genetics. Like, fat people are predominantly fat because of their genetics, right? And that is really, it makes people feel really uncomfortable, because you don't get to blame them anymore, yeah? But we've got to just accept this. It was proven something like 15 years ago that there was something called the fat gene. And about 5 years after that, they'd identified 2,500 fat genes and genetic mutations that contribute to weight loss and weight, to weight gain and weight retention.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of scientific fact that the biggest factor in weight gain and weight retention is your genetics.
Right,
and you cannot have the conversation without starting with that point.
Okay, all right. Message received. Thanks, Gavin. It is certainly true that two people can eat an identical diet, and one person can put on weight, and then the other can remain thin as a rake. So, yep, good point. Thank you, Gavin. Now we're going to take a break and then check in with our US correspondent for the latest from there.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
Ads for junk food will be banned in the UK from today, but are they really the cause of the nation's obesity crisis? And as Trump vows to run Venezuela, should Britain and the world's response be far more robust?
Richard Spur at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
The famous five are at home, and Julian could barely contain his excitement. "Why are you so excited?" asked George. "Is it your birthday? Is it snowing?" asked Dick. "Are we having treacle sponge tonight?" asked Anne. "No," said Julian. "It's the Great GWR Getaway Sale."
The Great GWR Getaway Sale is now on.
Hurry, book before January 5th at gwr.com or on the app. Great Western Railway. Adventures start here. Terms apply. Selected routes only. Travel by April 10th.
In a world where innovation meets style, there's a new name on the road. And right now, families like yours are discovering a car brand that values you. Feel the future in motion as the Emotify petrol and E5 electric blend next-level technology with real family life. With state-of-the-art features like intuitive voice control as standard, say hello to a car that fits your lifestyle and your future, starting from £23,990. Book your test drive online now. Search Emota to find your nearest dealer. Emota. Value everything.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate, digital taxes.
Mm-hmm, it's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah, probably will need some 2x4s. I want to go take the van in for a new fan belt, squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
David Smith is the Washington Bureau Chief at The Guardian and joins us on the line now. Hello, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Well, quite the few days. The VP in Venezuela was Delcy Rodriguez, and she initially got Donald Trump's support to run the country on his behalf, and now she does not get that support. What happened?
Yeah, that was a strange moment, one of many strange moments at Trump's press conference yesterday. Trump indicated that Rodriguez would basically do his bidding. Fall into line after she saw what happened to Nicolas Maduro. And then, a little later, she gave a speech which was much more defiant, saying that Venezuela will not be a colony of the U.S. and regarded what had happened to Maduro as a kidnapping. Trump is again intensifying the rhetoric, basically saying if she fails to fall into line, there will be a big price to pay, maybe worse than Maduro. And basically, you know, in the backdrop of this very strange situation where Trump has talked about running Venezuela, but there's not a military invasion happening, it appears. His hope is that the presence of this big U.S. Armada near the country will be enough to intimidate Rodriguez and other Venezuelan politicians and make them toe the line in terms of whatever America wants. And history suggests they may well not go along with that. In fact, they will sort of whip up crowds and be defiant against what they see as the imperialist force at their doorstep.
Yes, the plan, as far as there is one, is to blockade Venezuela so it can't get its ships of oil out of the country. And I believe that it doesn't have that much storage facilities to put the oil that it can't ship out in for later. So would that actually grind Venezuela's economy to a stop?
It's possible. Certainly, it's a very oil-dependent economy, and the U.S. is talking about this this quarantine, if you like, as one of the levers of influence, and that would potentially have a knock-on effect on Cuba as well. Does the U.S. really want to be in a position where it's seen by the rest of the world as almost starving Venezuela of deliberately driving down its economy? However, I fear it's not entirely surprising in that we know Donald Trump is a very transactional politician, and he's been pretty open, pretty brazen about the motivations of this having oil at the center of them, and he was excited about that at his press conference and the opportunities for U.S. oil companies here, and certainly used the word oil a lot more than the word democracy.
Or drugs, which was the initial excuse for attacking Venezuela in the first place.
That's right, and drugs are certainly still at the heart of the official charge sheet against Nicolas Maduro and his wife when they're due to appear in court tomorrow morning. But yeah, there have been shifting motivations here. Ostensibly, it's about narco-terrorism and drugs, but Trump has kind of given the game away with his frequent talk about oil and the incentive there. I guess there are some people who would say at least he's more honest about it than the likes of George W. Bush invading Iraq when there was this pretense of democracy and weapons of mass destruction, but critics would say oil was crucial to that one too.
Yeah, it's interesting that that phrase came up again. I think it was Rubio said that the drugs that Venezuela were sending, which of course they're not, because the drugs into America don't come from Venezuela, but he said that those drugs were weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, there was a great segment on one of the late night comedy shows a few weeks ago pointing out all the parallels between Venezuela and the Iraq war, and they did get a bit spooky in terms of he's not the first to use that phrase, weapons of mass destruction, and try and frame it as this idea of a threat to the U.S. homeland. And certainly since Maduro was captured, I think international legal experts have been discussing that, you know, if the U.S. was trying to justify what it did, then it would probably try to make the argument of self-defense. That would be unlikely to stand up in a court of international law, and many would argue this was a crime of aggression that breaches the UN Charter. But with the toppling of a dictator and oil and weapons of mass destruction and so on, there are some weird Iraq parallels, even though, of course, Trump has spent years railing against the Iraq war and promising never to repeat it.
Yes, and Iraq is in the top 10 countries with the most oil reserves. So is Iran, so is Nigeria. And Trump last year attacked all three of those countries, along with Yemen and Syria and Somalia and Venezuela. It's quite some list for a peace president, isn't it?
There are a few jokes yesterday about FIFA retaking the FIFA Peace Prize from him because it's hard to justify. And I think there are some diehard Trump supporters who are puzzled about all this. He has said repeatedly over the years he would end these reckless foreign interventions and entanglements, and yet he's literally all over the map at the moment, bombing Nigeria, Somalia, as you say, a long list of countries, still making his threats to Greenland, by the way.
Yes.
And, of course, Canada earlier. It does not sit well with this kind of idea of the isolationist America First president. And yet, I think he's been getting away with it and will continue to do so because we don't have mass numbers of troops on the ground, and we don't have body bags coming home to the U.S., and that's a crucial distinction here. You know, a lot of these interventions have been relatively quick and clean without much American loss of life.
Yes, but running Venezuela, I mean, how have they indicated in any way how they're going to go about doing that? Because Venezuela is a country of 30 million people. It's 1.5 times the size of Texas. I mean, in this country, we use Wales as an indicator of size, and it's 12 times the size of Wales.
I thought it was a telling moment of a TV interview on Sunday when Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, got irritated with the media for being fixated on this phrase, running Venezuela, and what Trump had said at his press conference. And to me, that indicated that yet again, it was an example of Trump improvising, ad-libbing, saying something he didn't really mean or hadn't thought through, and others having to clean up the mess. Because I don't think there's a detailed plan on running Venezuela or what that would look like. Because for a start, it's not regime change so far. It was a decapitation. It was taking out the top man. But his deputy is still around now. Rodriguez is interim president. The rest of the government is still there. Nor, as far as we know, is there any kind of plan for thousands of U.S. troops to pour in and seize control of military bases and the broadcast media and so on. From what Rubio said and everything else indicated, it seems to be more this idea of coercion that the U.S. military armada will sit nearby menacingly, threateningly, hoping that the government does its bidding. And of course, that's a very open question, whether they will actually be content to do that or actually rebel and do the opposite.
It is interesting that the attack on and the capture of Maduro came very shortly after Maduro had taken the mick out of Donald Trump by doing his stupid YMCA dance.
Yes, that might have irritated him, although reports in the New York Times and other US media in the last 24 hours suggest that this operation had been in the pipeline for quite a while, and there'd been all sorts of, frankly, pretty impressive work on the ground by undercover U.S. military figuring out Maduro's movements, and as the general said yesterday, even right down to what pets he has and other peccadilloes, and the timing of the intervention. I think it could have actually been a bit earlier, but the weather was not quite right. They did want to try and do it over Christmas and New Year because they knew a lot of the Venezuelan military personnel would be on holiday. But if the weather had not been right in the last couple of days, they would have had to wait until mid-January. But I think if you're a foreign leader, mocking Trump doesn't help. And of course, we saw the blowback in terms of the gleeful manner in which Trump and the White House on their social media accounts were publishing photos of Maduro with a blindfold, and they revel in the spectacle. Videos with action movie music on them, and it's all pretty extraordinary. We've never seen it before in American history like that. But some did, just going back to the Iraq comparison, some did say this is all a little bit like George W. Bush's mission accomplished moment, and we all know how that turned out, that they actually might be celebrating prematurely.
Yes. Now, just briefly, you mentioned Greenland, and Stephen Miller's wife posted a picture of Greenland with the American flag superimposed over it with the message, "Soon."
Indeed. We're approaching the first anniversary of Trump's inauguration, and that was something he raised at that time, this idea of the U.S. Acquiring Greenland, and I think his son even turned up there, and more recently some Americans have got into trouble for their activities in Greenland. And now Stephen Miller's wife, Katie Miller, sort of reminded us of that the issue has not gone away. And when she put that on social media, there was another protest from Greenland's prime minister.
Yes.
Obviously, Denmark very unhappy about this, and it shows you again just what a gulf there now is between Trump and Europe, and how Trump's unconventional behavior, all the rules he's happy to break, all the conventions he can smash. Apparently, that includes national sovereignty, and he has not forgotten his desire for Greenland for what he says are national security reasons, but again, like Venezuela, there are mineral resources that
attract. That's right. And gold. They probably had him at gold. David, very good to talk to you. Thanks for that. David Smith, Washington Bureau Chief at The Guardian. Now, if you missed any of this show or any of my Friday and Saturday shows, or indeed the A to Z over Christmas, then you can find them on Global Player or the new LBC app. Ask for Nick Abbott, the whole show podcast. You can get both of those free from your favourite app store, Global Player app or the LBC app. Coming up at 4, it's Ian Payne. But first, here's Richard Spur.
Morning, Nick, and good morning to you. Still to come, junk food commercials will be banned on TV and online from today in the UK in an attempt to tackle the ever-worsening rise in childhood obesity. Products high in sugar, salt and fat will not be advertised before 9 p.m. But will that really solve the nation's problem? First, though, world leaders are still reacting to Donald Trump's kidnapping of the Venezuelan
President Nicolas Maduro, who will now face charges in an American court. Trump is now also warning that the US is prepared to launch a second, much larger attack if he considers it needed. So this morning, should Britain and the world's response to this unprecedented action have been far stronger? And are you concerned that the American president might have finally succumbed to megalomania?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the United Nations Security Council is due to meet later on today to discuss President Trump's military intervention in Venezuela. Russia, China, and other Venezuelan allies have been accusing the United States of violating international law. President Nicolas Maduro is expected to appear at a court in New York during the day after being detained by the U.S. on Saturday. The army in Venezuela says he's been abducted. The former Conservative Defense Minister, Tobias Elwood, is concerned.
In my view,